Was that ant that stood up to me?
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh, one ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Hmm, puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends.
He's got a laptop.
Ooh,
he's got a laptop.
I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends.
He's got a laptop.
There it is.
He's got a laptop.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Voltage rock and roll. Alrighty then, folks. Electric cars are too good. Governments and energy industries fear them. Mad Science Show is live at www.shazizradio.com. I think I had three W's in there, not sure. Anyway, yeah, and at peopleforpeople.ning.com. So, with that said, So anyway, you know, here at the Mad Science Shack or lab or whatever you want to call it, Mad Science, we think so far out of the box, people think we're crazy. But that's all right. They can think we're crazy all they want. See, all these governments out there, they really rely on money that they get from taxes on different energy industries and different natural resources and such like that. And even one that we know real well, the whole carbon scam, which they're trying to put out to, you know, basically make some money. You know, make it sound like you're wanting to reduce your carbon footprint. You know, just kind of act like you're kind of against the oil industry when we all know the fact they're all in bed together. And so, with that said, they're you know, gonna act like they want you to reduce your carbon footprint. We got to clean up the planet and all this, and we got this whole climate change, global warming, or global disruption, or whatever it's gonna be next week when the math don't add up. Yeah, I said global disruption. Well, I guess it is a global disruption. Climate disruption. They keep changing the name on us, so every time it's like 20 inches of snow on your driveway, you know, it's climate change or climate disruption, you know. But if it's hot outside, well, it's global warming. So it's pretty convenient how you can have like multiple different names for the same exact thing that they say is caused by CO2 emissions and stuff like that. Never mind the fact that it's carbon monoxide, not carbon dioxide, but we won't even get into that. That's all right. You know, let the devil have their due or whatever, you know. But if you're going to be an activist out there, if you're going to be one of the ones that are talking about we got to save the planet, then maybe you might want to listen in today's show and figure out why it is that we have such a hard time, you know, getting electric cars, you know, as a standard on the market. Now, me personally, I know that you could take an internal combustion engine and re-engineer a few things and get that thing to be so incredibly efficient that there wouldn't be any exhaust fumes coming out of it. But regardless, you know, so that's what it is, you know. But if you don't want to re-engineer the engine to make it more fuel efficient and cleaner running, then you obviously really ain't got no serious concern about carbon emissions. Now, you got all these countries out there that claim they're going to be off the, you know, they're going to ban gasoline engines and stuff like that. See, now China's talking about it, but China's got a good reason to talk about it, because China realizes that the rest of the world's pretty much on the what they call the petrodollar. And so if he can take himself off of oil altogether, just nothing but electric, well, then he don't have to buy any oil from us. So there's a plus on China's side. Well, so, you know, the industries out there, they don't want people to know a few things, because if you know a few things, you might be able to do a few things, and you might be able to save too much money. And if you save too much money, they're not going to be able to be the kings and queens that they're accustomed to. So when it comes down to electric cars, why would I say electric cars are too good? First, let's get into a little bit of history of the electric car, and then I'll work my way up. I'm aiming to prove my case today that with an electric car, you know, you've got something that you've been wanting a long time, and you really hadn't really thought about it. It takes a little bit of thinking outside the box to get the gist of what I'm trying to say here. So, you know, with that said, I'm going to play a couple things and throw a smiley face over there for Gary. He's doing some stuff behind the scenes, trying to make sure everybody get a chance to hear the show. And so, cool. Let me do that. Oh, okay, I already got that one there. And so, like, that's really good for radio, ain't it? I'm sitting here trying to juggle. I'm not a very good juggler. I can't talk and juggle at the same time because my brain's got to be focused on the deal. Anyway, okay, so we got that sorted out. But I'm going to show you today, and hopefully you understand and believe what I'm talking about, how these electric cars are entirely too good. They're way too good. And that's why, you know, General Motors, when the EV1 came out, General Motors recalled all the EV1s that it could get its hands on and crushed them. They flattened them, folks. They were perfectly good electric cars. They were too doggone good. And General Motors didn't want to, make some people mad in the oil industry. And they didn't want to mess up the other side of their business, which would be the internal combustion cars. Of course, they give you all kinds of excuses that, hey, we just couldn't make enough money on it. There wasn't a big enough market for it, and so on down the line. Which is a big hockahooey, because these cars were really well built. And there's so many people, mostly movie stars, because they're the only ones that could afford it. Those folks there, they wanted these cars. They loved these cars. But, hey, we'll listen in. We'll hear a little bit about the history of the electric car, and then we'll get a little bit rowdy, like we do here on the Mad Science Show all the time, because, that's what we do. We create ruckuses and stuff. So anyway, listen to this. It's pretty interesting.
You are watching Two Seasons TV.
Hi, welcome to another Cold Fusion video. Major technological change is happening all around the world. You can see it everywhere. But sometimes, when change happens, it's actually just history repeating. This is evident in the electric car. In 1900, about 40% of cars were electric, 38% ran on steam, and only 22% ran on gasoline. Now, as we approach the 2020s, we're rediscovering the electric car. So how could the electric car be so popular, only to all but vanish by 1935? Why were most of the first cars electric, and what happened to them? In this video, we'll take a look. I just want to give a shout out to Squarespace for helping make this video possible. Squarespace is one of the easiest ways to build a website. There's nothing to patch or upgrade ever, and it's flexible. The end result looks professional.
Hey, I'll pause this just for a second while you're talking about Squarespace. Anyway, I would really, really, really love to get a hold of one of those antique electric cars. I have some ideas that would be really fun to mess with one of those things. As far as that goes, after today's show, you'll understand why I say I would love to get a hold of one of the modern-day electric cars as well. So, anyway, let's just keep rolling. Let this man finish out his deal here.
And the whole process makes building a website easy. If you're looking to build your own website, start your free trial today. Visit www.squarespace.com/coldfusion to get 10% off your first purchase. First, a little timeline of the innovation in automobiles. The first practical electric vehicle was built by Thomas Davenport in 1835. Surprisingly, this was almost 30 years after the first hydrogen car. The gasoline engine didn't come about until 18...
Hold on, did you just say hydrogen car? Let me rewind that just a hair. Try this again.
Innovation in automobiles. The first practical electric vehicle was built by Thomas Davenport in 1835. Surprisingly, this was almost 30 years after the first hydrogen car. The gasoline engine didn't come about until 1870, and the first production car was in 1885 by Carl Benz. Carl's company would later be known as Mercedes-Benz. Rudolf Diesel would unveil his diesel engine running on peanut oil at the World's Fair in Paris, 1900. The first few decades of the 1900s would see the widespread introduction of the internal combustion engine. In a way, this technology was taking on the baton from the steam engine in the 1800s. Yes, steam-powered cars did exist, but unfortunately, they required 45 minutes to warm up in cold weather and needed to be topped up with substantial amounts of water, limiting their range. There had to be a better solution. The early gasoline-powered cars were better than steam, but were by no means perfect. To get them started, you needed a lot of muscle to wrestle with a hand crank, and even changing gears was a tall task.
Oh,
it started giving
me so close!
This wasn't to mention that they were noisy, often vibrated and shook, and emitted an offensive odor. For these reasons, electric cars were seen as the best way forward in personal transport. They were whisper quiet, easy to drive, and required relatively little effort to run. In addition, electric cars were perfectly fit for short trips around the city, as country roads weren't suited for cars just yet. They were too bumpy and treacherous. Big names such as Ferdinand Porsche, founder of the Porsche Motor Company, and Thomas Edison went all in on the electric trend. In fact, Porsche's very first car in 1898 was an electric model known as the Lohner Porsche. 1 year later, Edison set out on a mission to make better, longer-lasting batteries for cars. He believed that this form of transport was clearly the future, so he was determined. Despite many attempts, he ultimately abandons this vision a decade later. At the turn of the century, overall, the car, electric or otherwise, was seen as an expensive novelty only for the rich. There needed to be a way for the common man to travel to and fro as he pleased. Cars needed to be affordable, yet mass-produced. It would be a man named Henry that would bring this into reality. Henry Ford thought hard about how cars were produced, and realized that assembling a single car by a group of three or four men was very inefficient. By observing the way in which meat and tin factories were run, he understood that an assembly system would be much better suited. This system would only have a person work on a specialized part before that part moved on to the next person down the line. With the idea of the assembly line, he revolutionized the car industry, allowing cars to be mass-produced for the first time. This brought the price down to an affordable level. By 1914, Ford was selling more cars than all the other car manufacturers combined. A Model T sold for about $260, or $6,400 today, while an electric Roadster sold for around $1,700, or $43,000 today. There was just no electric answer to the cheaper gasoline Model T. Or was there? As it turns out, there almost was. This next part is a story that's often lost in history. It was known that Henry Ford and Thomas Edison were very close friends. In fact, Ford used to work at Edison's lighting company when he created his first experimental car in 1896. Edison encouraged Ford to pursue this path, resulting in the Ford Motor Company. In 1914, the pair were working on an experimental electric car. Here's Henry Ford in an issue of the New York Times, January 11th, 1914. Quote, "Within a year, I hope we shall begin the manufacture of an electric automobile. I don't like to talk about things which are a year ahead, but I am willing to tell you something of my plans. The fact is, Mr. Edison and I have been working for some years on an electric automobile which would be cheap and practical. Cars have been built for experimental purposes, and we are satisfied now that the way is clear to success. The problem so far has been to build a storage battery, lightweight, which would operate for long distances without recharging. Mr. Edison has been experimenting with such a battery for some time." End quote. Edison's words in a 1914 issue of Automobile Topics was interesting. Quote, "I believe that ultimately, the electric motor will be universally used for trucking in all large cities, and that the electric automobile will be the family carriage of the future. All trucking must come to electricity. I am convinced that it will not be long before all trucking in New York will be electric." End quote. So the details of what happened next are pretty sketchy. Some people say that the experimental labs for the electric cars were burnt down in a fire. Others say that the oil industry got to Ford. But the most likely explanation is that the batteries that Ford wanted to use weren't capable of powering an electric car. Whatever the reason, eventually the project fell apart after $1.4 million of investment, around $34 million today. With no cheap mass-produced model in sight, this was the beginning of the end for the electric car. The invention of the electric starter, which gained popularity in the 1910s, took the manual effort out of starting a gasoline car. This combined with the cheap oil of the time all impacted the viability of the electric car. Further to this, the quality of the roads began to improve, meaning that people weren't just limited to inner city travel. In the end, it was all too much, and the superior range of the petrol car was the final straw that ultimately led to its downfall. The battery technology just wasn't there. Throughout the decades, many attempts to bring back the electric car were made, perhaps none more infamous than General Motors' EV1 in the 1990s. But as we all know today, the electric car is finally here. After seeing what Tesla has done, major manufacturers such as Volvo, Aston Martin, General Motors, Jaguar, and Land Rover are all pledging to go electric. It really is funny the way things go sometimes. So anyway, that's it. Thanks for watching. I hope you learned something from this video. If you've just stumbled across this channel, feel free to subscribe. This has been Dagogo. You've been watching Cold Fusion. And until next time, I'll see you again for the next video. Cheers, guys. Have a good one.
Cold Fusion. It's new thinking.
Okay, so there's one right there. Some interesting things in there. I'm gonna put another one in there. Some more interesting.
Hello, I'm Simon Whistler. You're watching the Today I Found Our YouTube channel, and in the video today, we're looking at the 19th century dominance of the electric car. While a popular claim among car companies and advertisements today is often that they've invented the first commercially viable electric car, in fact, electric cars were at one time more popular than gas-powered ones. For instance, in 1899, 90% of New York City taxicabs were electric vehicles. This fleet of electric cars was built by the Electric Carriage and Wagon Company of Philadelphia. Not only that, but in 1899 and 1900, electric cars outsold all other types of cars, such as gas and steam-powered vehicles. In 1902, an electric car, the Baker Torpedo, became the first car to have an aerodynamic body that enclosed both the driver and the platform. This car at one point reached 80 miles per hour in a speed test before crashing and killing two spectators. It was later clocked as high as 120 miles per hour, but with spectators not invited this time. Electric cars got their start in the early 1800s. Early efforts were more or less proof of concept inventions, with limited speed and range, as well as using non-rechargeable batteries. However, in 1842, two inventors separately created the first practical electric cars with rechargeable batteries. The inventors were American Thomas Davenport and a Scotsman, Robert Davidson. Over time, improvements were made by various inventors, improving charge capacity of the cars, making better electric motors, and things of this nature. What really eventually jump-started the popularity of electric cars was in 1880, when Thomas Edison was awarded the patent for the carbon filament vacuum tube, a practical light bulb. As these bulbs became increasingly popular over the next couple of decades, so did the widespread distribution of electricity, providing the infrastructure needed for the electric car to be viable for the general public. The electric cars had no vibrations from the engine and were extremely quiet compared to its competitors. They also didn't emit smoke or backfire frequently, as did gas-powered cars. They were also ready to go right from when you sat in the car, unlike gas-powered cars that needed to be cranked by hand to start. This was not only difficult, but could also be dangerous. Steam-powered cars, on the other hand, at the time, took up to 45 minutes to get going on cold days. The other large advantage with electric cars was not having to change gears, which was a hard thing to do in early cars, but something that wasn't necessary in electric cars. The only real advantage that gas-powered cars had at this time were the long ranges they were capable of with larger tanks and the ability to fill up quickly when the tank was empty. However, because at the time there weren't a lot of well-developed roads for cars to drive on safely, most people only drove cars in cities anyway, rarely travelling long distances. Notable popular electric cars of the 1900s were the Columbia Runabout, which could go 40 miles on a single charge and run at an average speed of 15 miles per hour, which wasn't that bad at the time. The 1914 Detroit electric car, which had a range of 80 miles on a single charge, and was the favourite car of none other than Clara Ford, Henry Ford's wife. He bought the car for her, despite the fact that at the time his company was presently breaking the balls of the electric car industry. Another great one was the American Morrison electric car, which was capable of ranges of up to 182 miles on a single charge. It was also capable of 14 miles per hour, which again isn't notable by today's standards, but that 182 mile range certainly is. Cost for a basic model electric car in the early 1900s was about $1,000, with more lavishly decked out models costing closer to $3,000 apiece. Now enter Henry Ford and a few other factors, and we'll see the downfall of the electric car. By 1915, Henry Ford, due in part to his innovative assembly line construction and other organizational and technological advances, was able to offer his cars at around a base price of $500 apiece, equivalent to about $10,000 today, which made it affordable for even average people, something that had never been the case before with cars. In contrast, at that time, the average price of an electric car had steadily risen to about $1,700. This was also around the same time crude oil was discovered in Texas and Oklahoma, which drastically reduced the cost of gasoline so that it was now affordable to the average consumer. In addition to these factors, Charles Kettering invented the electric starter, which eliminated the need to hand crank gas-powered engines. Roads began expanding, spurring the need for greater range that only gas engines could provide at the time. This was not only because of the range factor, but also because gasoline cars were now becoming significantly faster than electric cars. By 1935, the electric car was officially dead and wasn't revisited until around the 1960s, and then still unsuccessfully. It's only until very recently with the Tesla company that electric cars have once again become successful. So I really hope you enjoyed that video. If you did, do give us a like below and do subscribe to our channel. We put out brand new stuff just like this every single day. Big subscribe button below me now, which you can click on, and all of that stuff will go right into your feed. Over there on the right, a couple of other videos you'll probably enjoy if you enjoyed this one, and thank you for watching.
So in that one there and in the one prior, there's a lot of interesting details. So the secrets are in the details there, folks. If you listen in, how long these cars how long electric cars have been around, and how far they could go back then on a single charge, and how fast they could go. And it kept getting better and better over time, and so now you got some modern day cars. They're really doing some pretty impressive things. Tesla's doing got some really nice looking cars. But anyway, let's keep going on. We'll get a little bit more of the history of electric cars in there first.
The story of the electric car began in 1834 when American Thomas Davenport built the first practical electric motor. This was followed in 1865 when Frenchman Gaston Plante invented the rechargeable lead-acid battery. In 1884, Englishman Thomas Parker built the first practical electric car. During the 1890s, electric cars flourished and outsold all other types of cars.
100 years ago, there were more electrics on the road than there were gas cars. For many people, electric cars were the car of choice. They were quiet and smooth and could be charged at home. Gas cars, by comparison, required cranking and produced exhaust.
In 1912, production of electric cars peaked as new standards were set by the Detroit Electric. By the 1920s, electric cars were in decline due to reduced gasoline prices and the demand for longer range. The 1930s to 1960s are considered the dead years for electric cars, with a few exceptions, such as the 1936 Wilson Electric, the 1947 Nissan Tamar Electric, the 1959 Henny Kilowatt, and the iconic British electric milk float. The 1973 oil crisis renewed interest in electric cars, and between 1977 to 1979, General Motors spent over $20 million on electric car research and development. In 1990, California passed the Zero Emissions Vehicle Act, giving further impetus to electric cars.
Electric cars began to appear on roads all over California. They were quiet and fast, produced no exhaust, and ran without gasoline. 10 years later, these futuristic cars were almost entirely gone.
In the late 1990s, manufacturers again lost interest and recalled and crushed their electric cars.
General Motors is almost finished off. I think, I don't imagine there's very many EV ones left that haven't been crushed out. It's pretty sad.
By the early 2000s, interest continued to wane, and California significantly watered down its Zero Emissions Vehicle Act due to pressure from car makers and the oil industry. In 2005, the film Who Killed the Electric Car documented General Motors' crushing of its EVs. In 2006, Al Gore's film, An Inconvenient Truth, increased awareness of climate change, and clean and green electric cars were again in demand. In 2007, General Motors announced development of the Volt Electric. Following this, in 2008, Tesla released the first Tesla Roadster Electric, and the Blade Electron began to be produced and sold in Australia. By 2009, Mitsubishi had released the iMEV in Japan, and the iMEV Sport concept car debuted at the Sydney Motor Show in 2010. Also in 2010, Finland celebrated the success of its Think electric car. Nissan also released the Leaf Electric in the United States, with the first batch of 20,000 being sold out before it hit the showroom floor. General Motors plans to release the Volt Electric in late 2010. Meanwhile in Canberra, Peter Campbell, Centre, rips the petrol engine out of his Daihatsu Charade, inserts an electric motor, and drives off into the future.
So, there's even more interesting information out there about all these electric cars. I'm not done yet, so let's get on to this next one right here.
Electric driving in the Netherlands only really started around 3 years ago, but the history of the electric car goes back further than you might think. As early as the 19th century, there are electric cars that produce less vibration, fumes, and noise than petrol cars. This makes them popular. Inventors like Ferdinand Porsche are enthusiastic as well. His 1897 system Lohner Porsche runs on two electric motors. And after inventing the light bulb, Thomas Edison works on batteries for electric vehicles. But due to their range, or rather their limited range, electric cars eventually drop out of the picture. But with each energy crisis throughout history, they reappear. In the 70s, idealists convert existing cars to electric, although the industry doesn't follow their example yet. In the 90s, that changes for the first time in California. General Motors introduces the EV1 after the government has issued stringent standards for harmful emissions. In the slipstreams, various electric cars are whizzing around, but from one day to the next, the cars are banned by the manufacturers, to the displeasure of motorists who have now acquired a taste for electric driving. Apart from a handful of Hollywood stars, the world is not yet ready for the electric car. Until eventually things really get going in the 21st century. Several manufacturers bring electric models onto the market and people are buying them all over the world. Various models can be seen driving around the Dutch roads in 2011, like the Tesla Roadster and the Nissan Leaf, the car of the year. The plug-in hybrids that drive fully electric for a few dozen miles before switching to fuel are also a big success. The high-end Fisker Karma is selling exceptionally well, and the Opel Ampera was named European Car of the Year in 2012. Soon, nearly all the big manufacturers are releasing electric models. But what good are electric cars without charging facilities? To enable on-street charging, the ELAD Foundation was set up. And on October 14, 2009, the first public charging point was opened by former Dutch Prime Minister Ruud Lubbers. After a cautious start, more charging points soon followed, and more councils wanted to join in. Not only is the infrastructure slowly coming of age, but so is the available support. Agreements are made on a universal plug. With a special pass, you can charge and pay anywhere. Charging abroad is made possible through international cooperation. On their smartphone or sat-nav, motorists can get real-time information on where to find available charging stations. The number of proud and enthusiastic electric car drivers is growing, and numerous records are broken. Like the one for the largest number of charging points and cars recharging in one location. In the past 3 years, the ELAD Foundation has worked hard to make electric driving in the Netherlands possible. We've installed thousands of charging points in streets all over the country. But we've passed the startup phase. We need to find structural funding so the rollout of public charging points can continue. The ELAD Foundation is not doing this on its own. The new Dutch administration has recognized that electric transport has a lot to offer the Netherlands. It plans to make agreements on the charging infrastructure with grid operators, energy companies, and local authorities. in order to stimulate electric mobility further. This is stated in the coalition agreement. In short, electric driving may have a long history, but its future has only just begun.
So, moving right along here. You know, I put a link over there into the People for People chat room for a YouTube video. It's pretty funny if you want to go watch. It's an old antique car compilation. It's pretty funny. It says, gadgets galore, funny, way old automobiles, clips, and calamities. You just got to see it to appreciate it. But anyway, let's keep moving.
In 1987, GM won the World Solar Challenge race. GM CEO Roger Smith challenged the same design team to build a prototype for a practical electric car.
To drive the motor for all the different driving conditions.
Allen's breakthrough power system helped create an electric car unlike any that had ever been driven before.
I had one of those early EV ones, and I used it here in the Capitol. I love the car.
Believe it or not, that sucker goes. That thing will take you down the PCH so fast you can get a ticket.
They were quiet and fast, produced no exhaust, and ran without gasoline.
And we started seeing the momentum building for this and the waiting lists being created for these cars.
10 years later, these futuristic cars were almost entirely gone. GM spokesman Dave Bartmus has worked for GM for nearly 10 years.
We spent in excess of $1 billion to drive this market, to build the market.
We would sit down with Hal Riney or with executives from GM and make, you know, how far, how fast, how much? These are the three questions we're getting. Please put it in the advertising. It's not rocket science.
He said that they spent in excess of $1 billion to produce that EV1, only to turn around and crush it because they said they weren't making enough money. You would think any real business would want to try to recuperate as much money of that $1 billion as possible. So there was something else going on behind the scenes there, folks.
And they would go back and do the exact opposite. So we started this waiting list in order to prove demand to GM. But no matter how many people we got on that list, it was never considered enough demand.
We have heard about these long waiting lists. We contacted each of those folks, and we whittled that list down.
Only recently did they finally admit that there actually was a waiting list.
And we whittled that list down.
We were having a lunch in the executive dining room at the GM Tech Center one day, and just the two of us, and he leans over to me and he says, Dobbles, you know something? You're my worst enemy. And I said, why that? And he said, well, I'm out there lobbying to show that there's no demand for electric vehicles, and you're out there proving me wrong.
As car companies made the case there was no demand, GM quietly closed its EV1 assembly line and began laying off its sales force.
They started with the ones with the biggest waiting list.
Studying General Motors' practices over the years, the executives at the top, their motto seemed to have been going backwards into the future.
When I noticed that GM was losing interest was when I wanted to release my car. And they wouldn't let me.
They didn't give me an option to buy. They said, thank you for leasing the car.
Such and such a date, or you're going to be held liable.
GM did do it right. They did create a great, great car. It's well engineered. It's well designed. It's enjoyable to drive. I've never seen a company be so cannibalistic about its own product before. It's such an odd experience.
Pull over at General Motors, and looking down, we could see right next to the racetrack where the EV1 was first tested, we saw, I don't know, maybe 50 EV1s crushed and put on top of semi-flatbeds.
The fate of the last 78 EV1s remained in doubt. Chelsea led a last-ditch effort to buy the cars from GM.
Okay, General Motors contends that no one wants these EV1s here. Would anybody be willing to buy them for the residual price of the lease? And within 48 hours, over 80 people had signed up. And there were only 78 cars in that lot, and already we had a waiting list for a car that wasn't available.
Join me in holding this check, offering $1.9 million to General Motors to put these cars back on the road.
Despite the offer, GM did not respond. Car makers argued that there was not enough demand for the electric car.
And we whittled that list down.
claiming to have spent millions of dollars on advertising, they said buyers weren't interested.
$1.9 million to General Motors.
This General Motors, 40, 50 years ago, bought up the trolley systems and shut them down. The oil companies have opposed the creation of an electric infrastructure.
I made the case at the General Motors board that the reason for the EV1 was to give General Motors a very big head start. They could not understand how Toyota could possibly make a profit out of the Prius, for example. They were going to lose their shirt.
As it gave enormous incentives to buy SUVs, the federal government also sued California to stop the electric car.
It's David versus Goliath.
All right, let's pause this. Did you hear that? Talking about the federal government sued the auto industry to stop the electric car. Think about that. Well, who's the ones out there talking about climate change, climate disruption, or global warming? Out there telling you to reduce your carbon footprint, yet doing everything they can to actively, shut down the electric car. Now, see, there are electric cars out there. There's even hybrids, but they've even come up against hybrids as well. So that ought to tell you something right there. What purpose would they want to try to get rid of hybrid cars, hybrid electric, or all electric? Why would they want to get rid of that? Well, if you think about the infrastructure of the governmental system that we've got, we live on the petrol dollar. So the petrol dollar is going to generate a lot of revenue for the government. All the governments, for that matter of fact. But regardless, if China wants to get all electric, there's got to be a reason why China wants to get all electric. Because if they get all electric, they don't need oil. So that's something that the rest of the world can't hold over their head anymore, because they don't need oil in order to run their vehicles. So, with that said, things are starting to add up here. What's going on here? You think about the modern day electric car. Think about the batteries in there, even the hybrid electric. Hybrid electric, if you think about how when you get inside that vehicle and you're driving down the road, this car has to pull the weight of itself and the batteries and you down the road. And for the most part, I think they say most of them get around about 100 miles per charge. And the modern day ones will charge up faster than the older ones, obviously, because of the newer battery technology and charging technology and so on. But there's something more than meets the eye there. Imagine if you had the drivetrain alone out of one of those electric cars. So you got one, let's say you got a hybrid. And so you got this hybrid electric car, and it doesn't have to pull the weight of that car any longer. Instead, you hook the drivetrain up to a couple generating heads, and the only time you have to run the electric or the gasoline portion of the deal is whenever you need to recharge those batteries. So you get 100 miles with the whole car, and so you should be able to get a lot more time use out of the batteries for just running generator heads. You're producing electricity with that car to actually run your house, and from that point on, the only time the engine never kicks on is in order to recharge the battery bank when the battery bank gets low. So you're not even running the internal combustion portion of it very long at all, just off and on throughout the day if necessary. And then if you have also solar or wind power connected to that same drivetrain, then you can sit there and keep those batteries completely charged up all day long. And then the only time that that gasoline engine would kick on would be throughout the night when the battery voltage started getting low. Well, if you carefully watched your electrical usage, the chances of it ever having to kick on through the night is pretty slim, because these new modern day battery banks are really impressive. So maybe the electric car electric cars are too good. Maybe they're starting to get worried that somebody might just figure out that, hey, this thing will drive me down the road. What's the difference between it driving me down the road and it driving some generator heads in order to produce electricity for my house? So if you had one of those drivetrains, whether it be a hybrid or just straight up electric, connected to some solar and some wind, and then you had your own transformer that you owned that the power company didn't own, you could have your own personalized power plant in the in your yard, whatever, wherever you need to put it. So from that point on, all the money you saved on electricity, then you could then in turn put back into a savings account for just such an emergency you had to get some repairs done, unless you're a handyman and you can do it yourself. Well, then you'd always have a backup, so if anything went wrong, you could get it repaired. But the thing about it is, these new modern day electric cars are incredible. And the governments of the world know this. The governments of the world also know about the hybrid electric. Of course, they're going to say their reasoning behind wanting to ban hybrid electric cars is because that the safety issue. If somebody works on it who's not qualified or whatever, that there could be a safety hazard. Yes, Lord, like the government really cares about your safety. If they did, their actions speak louder than words, and their track record stinks. So the reality is, they see that their money cow might be going in the wrong direction, and so they need to get that money cow back over to the corral, so to speak. So if you take and step outside the box and you think about the reality of how incredible the new technology is on these electric vehicles, and in the electrical circuitry that we have nowadays, power MOSFETs that can switch powers on and off, and pulse coils, you could use one of these systems to literally build a power plant for your home to run your entire house off of it. If it's able to run that entire car down the road, do the math. Calculate up how much one of those cars actually weighs, and then throw in maybe one fat person, a skinny guy, or a couple kids, or maybe four or five kids or whatever, doing your normal day thing, and just drive back and forth to the store where you get your groceries in and whatever you need at the hardware store, make a journey throughout the day. Most folks don't travel more than 30 or 40 miles a day, unless they got a job that's farther away. But even if these cars would only get 100-mile range, that's pretty doggone impressive, wouldn't you think? And so, if with power stations all around that you can power these electric vehicles up and then drive this vehicle home, and instead of shutting the dang thing off, you just plug it into your house and let the car run your electricity. If you're not pulling around all the excess weight, such as the car body and the stereo system and the heater and all that kind of stuff, and you're just using that power plant to run electricity, you could be surprised at that 100 miles range or more that these electric vehicles could get, how long it could actually run your house with a couple generator heads. Might not even take a couple. Could be a 10,000 watt generator head would be more than enough to run your house. It's hard to say. And then with the ideas that I'm wanting to show everybody once I get my new lab put together on a different way to use energy so incredibly efficient, then you wouldn't even have to run that thing very often at all. So, with that said, we got every piece of the puzzle necessary to give the world what it is that they said that they've wanted for so many years. We want clean, renewable, alternative energy. Okay, it's here. What are you waiting on? Alright, all the environmentalists out there, all the alternative energy researchers, even the mainstream science, even the mainstream media, and all the governments out there are using basically hypocrisy and, just trying to tell you one thing while talking out the side of their neck while collecting up the whole carbon tax thing and all that kind of stuff. It's pure ridiculousness, folks. That's why mad science is around. Because mainstream science sold to the devil, basically dropped the ball. You don't have to be no rocket scientist to understand how incredibly engineered these modern-day electric vehicles are. They've got motorcycles that are all electric that are pretty impressive. Now, I've been trying to get, basically gather a crowd and say, look, hey, Take a look at that right there. Take a look at that over there. Let's back up. Now you got all these things on the table. What would happen if you combined all those together? Well, you'd have exactly what you keep saying that you want. And even when it comes down to the internal combustion engine. For Pete's sake, folks, if you did a little bit of re-engineering on those things, you could get incredible fuel efficiency on them. And as far as the exhaust, we've got ways that we can clean that exhaust before it ever even hits the air. By the time it gets out to the air, it ain't nothing but oxygen. So, what's the deal? What's the big deal here? Y'all, it all boils down to the petrol dollar. It all boils down to people wanting to make money. And, you know, obviously you don't want somebody knowing what Stan Myers proved to the world that everybody keeps trying to debunk but can't. Can't seem to get rid of Stan Myers. Why is that? Because he showed you that you can run a car on water. Now, the Mythbusters out there, which I used to really like that show, they did a hack job on hydrogen technology and lost a fan forever. I won't ever watch another Mythbusters unless I'm there to criticize their lies and point out the truth. Because what they did was they sat there and basically tried to shoot down technology that has already been proven, try to make somebody out to be a liar, try to diminish somebody's idea that you could actually run a car on hydrogen, which we already know you can, because they do, and there are better ways than electrolysis in order to separate the hydrogen and oxygen, but you can't get nobody in the mainstream to listen. They know. They already know. They know the truth, but they're not going to play the game because it's not going to make them money. And the whole syndicate, which is the governmental system and the doggone energy and auto industry, they're all in bed together and they all know the facts. They got to scratch this guy's back to scratch their other guy's back. That's why Tesla has so many hard times trying to get the government's state of their word, because when the government offers $14,000 subsidy for those who go out and buy these doggone electric cars in order to reduce the emissions for climate change, well, then they turn around and cancel the program. And so that kind of sticks it to Tesla, because he was counting on that excess money to help his manufacturing and stuff. So, you know, it goes on and on. But the fact is, these electric cars are too good, and the governments know it. They're way too good. They're getting scared. Why would General Motors spend over $1 billion, in excess of $1 billion, to put a car together just to turn around, reclaim these cars after somebody's lease came up, and then crush them? 50 EV1s crushed. Now, there's probably more than that by now, but either way, they force these people to give them back. You know, they wouldn't renew their lease. These people love these cars, and they wouldn't renew it, and so they crushed them. That's it. What a waste. All that technology down the toilet. And it's not the first time all this has gone on. You know, there's been electric cars throughout the deal, but see, here's the thing. The average Joe tries to build an electric car. Small business tries to build an electric car. They don't have access to all the high-tech equipment to do it really good. So they get a fairly decent little electric car that doesn't seem to be a very impressive. Now, those types of electric cars, the system will allow through, because when people get in them, they're too small, they look like heck, they don't go very far, and so that makes everybody believe that the electric car is worthless, when in fact, it's not. Electric cars been around since way back in the 1800s, since automobiles actually came around. So, what gives here? Let's finish this out here a bit.
Very big way. But if there are enough Davids in the world, we can win.
The last EV1s in the Burbank lot were taken away and destroyed.
It will go down as one of the biggest blunders in the history of the automotive industry.
We all have to adapt to change. Let's build new industries. Let's make America strong again.
We shred the cars, about a car a minute, 1,000 cars a day on a good day.
And what's interesting, the first thing we noticed when we drove up here, you're going to be shredding some new cars here, too. These look like perfectly good cars. Why are you shredding them up?
A little bit of a mystery, really.
Goliath won this round, But now Goliath has new problems.
There's no precedent for a car company rounding up every one of a particular kind of car and crushing them as if they're afraid one might get away.
I know you're all worried, and I agree. There's plenty to be worried about, like this solar power plant, already operational outside Los Angeles. Photovoltaic cells. They convert sunlight directly into electricity. Fluorescence lasts 10 times as long as a conventional light bulb, uses only a quarter of the power. An electric car, partially powered by solar panels. But the truth is, gentlemen, I'm not worried about any of these things. Because no one's ever going to know about them.
Yeah, that's what you think, mister. Everyone's going to know about them. They better pray that I don't get a hold of one of those electric cars. Especially one of those hybrids, because the combination of the gas portion of it and the electric portion of it, I'll show everybody exactly what it is I'm talking about. It don't take much to pulse a transformer. You got those 50 kV transformers out there on the pole, or 25 kV, even down to 15 kV, depending on what type of power you need. If you understand how to use those and how they're actually functioning, one of those drivetrains out of one of those electric cars would way, way, way overpower that thing. You could help power your whole doggone neighborhood with one of those cars. And they don't want you to know that. If they wanted you to know that, they wouldn't be putting so much effort into making sure you don't know that. Why would you crush brand new electric vehicles that you keep on claiming that we need to do in order to save the environment? I see the government can get out there and they can allow people to spray crud in the air. You know, the whole chemtrail that doesn't really exist thing. Nobody sprays crud in the air. I did a video years ago about poison skies because I knew that that wasn't natural. But yo, no, I'm a tinfoil hat wearing nutcase because I spoke about it. But then years and years later, they finally admitted it, you know. Sure, we're doing tests. Yeah, they ask you to do tests. You go out there and look at some of these trees out there and see some of the funguses that's on these trees and some of the things that's going on in your environment. It's shocking. But, you know, hey, you're just a nut for saying it. So all these environmentalists out there, they make me madder than the whole mainstream media and the government, because if they really seriously cared about the environment, number one, they wouldn't be throwing their plastic trash when they go to protest and doing all kinds of disgusting things on the sidewalk or whatever. They'd be out there finding people like myself and others that are into alternative energy, and they'd be rallying up the troops to say, hey, these guys know the answer. They got the solution. So why don't we help them to get it out there to prove it to the world? If you're standing next to the ocean and you're dying of thirst, it's because you didn't pay attention in science class. Plain and simple. You know, there is such a thing as willful ignorance. It's not necessarily because you're a stupid person, or you ain't too bright, or two candles short of a full box, or whatever. It don't matter. You know, the fact is, if you haven't paid attention to all this stuff out here, all the technology that lays before you, we've got computer technology, we've got microprocessors and all kinds of stuff that can do all kinds of cool things. And we got transistor and resistors and diodes technologies where you can build circuit board smart systems that will tell you how much power is this thing got, and it'll actually turn things on, shut things off. It'll pulse coils, which if you look inside those transformers out there, that's all they are, is coils. They're transformers, just step up, step down transformers, whichever one you want. And it don't take much to pulse them things. Not nowhere near the amount of power that's shoved to them. And if you really paid attention to them, you find out that there's a whole lot more than meets the eye with those things. But the electric industry don't want you to know the truth. Heck, even the linemen or whatever, after trying to make a living, they don't want you to know everything there is to know about that. They want to keep a job. You know, and it's not like they wouldn't be out of a job anyway, because somebody had to come around and safely connect all these different things if you didn't know how to do it. So there's plenty of jobs to go around for all the whole different transition from, you know, what we got going on to what we could have going. And if you're so worried about, you know, losing your job, building a doggone internal combustion engine vehicle or whatever, you know, hey, so what? It runs better. It gets better gas mileage. You're still going to have to build it. So all of the negative deal where they're trying to say, you know, oh, well, we can't do this because of that, and everybody, you'll ruin the jobs, or for national security reasons. It's national security reasons, because if you have to, you know, realize that you're not going to make as much money off of the oil, well, then the governmental system, the financial system is in a little bit of trouble, right? Wrong. You just re-engineer that financial system, you know? Where there's a will, there's a way. This is a pure ridiculousness that you have to sit around and try to figure out ways in order to show people something that's already sitting in front of their face. Heck, if it was a snake, it would have bit them, folks. Would have bit them right on the tip of their nose. They'd had a big old swollen beak up there. It looked like some sort of basketball hanging off their face from the snake bite. But no, ain't nobody to want to listen. You know, I've been saying this stuff for so doggone long, and I gotta show all these different things. It's like put up or shut up, that kind of deal. They got it. They've had this technology. These electric cars are too good, and they know it. That's why they want to get rid of them. The electric hybrids are too good. They know it. That's why they want to get rid of them. Well, I mean, what would happen if you decided, somebody finally realized that you've got a perfect power plant that you can put in your house and run your entire house, not even have to worry about any kind of carbon emissions or anything like that? You know, it could either be an all-electric version, or it could be a doggone hybrid electric, or even a hydrogen hybrid electric. So, if you got a little hydrogen engine that would run this generator head long enough to charge the batteries up to their capacity that they need, it'd shut itself off when it was done charging the batteries, just like your alternator does. You've got a built-in voltage regulator in your alternator. Whenever your battery's charged up, your alternator's not constantly charging your battery. If it was, it would overcharge your battery, and your battery would blow up. They know that. So, for the most part, your alternator's just spinning around in circles, wasting energy the whole entire time. You know, if you had solar panels on there that would maintain the voltage like my friend Muddy did on his truck, your alternator would never kick on, which would save you fuel. So where there's a will, there's a way. You could re-engineer a few things, and you could get these doggone vehicles to be so incredibly efficient and clean running, it'd be mind-blowing. I'm tired of you know, this whole doggone, it's like a ball and chain, man. This system is just dragging the whole of humanity down. People in what they like to classify third world countries can't even get clean water and some air conditioning when it's hot and some heat when it's cold and that kind of stuff. And so everybody wants to sit around and show you all these videos of how terrible the world is, but nobody's doing nothing about it, really. We're in the year 2020. What's taking so long? We've got things, mind-blowing technology. You can watch TV on a little watch on your wrist and stuff. You got watches that'll tell you what your heartbeat is and all this kind of stuff. Nope, it's all about power. You got to keep the power going, right? But it ain't the kind of power you think. It's the kind of power that keeps them in business. So this one here has talked about the revenge of the electric car.
When you look at the 405 or the 101 or the 110, you see how much convenience, how much mobility, how much economic activity those corridors support. It has built fortunes, it has saved lives, it has created communities, it's made untold numbers of businesses possible. See, now this car right here, this Porsche Cayman S, this is a stone-cold four-wheeled mother of a car. Look how nice that car is. Ho, ho, ho. Look how cute that car is. Look at that Honda Fit. Yes, baby, cute, awesome car. The problem is the gasoline in the tank. Let's kick this mule. My God. Oh, oh. Come on. I spent my childhood driving fast cars, working on them, writing about them. I love gasoline horsepower. But I've come to the conclusion that I'll never buy another gasoline-powered car as long as I live. The only way forward is electric cars.
It's a whole bunch of robotics putting some cars together. Pretty impressive.
It started with an email. The electric car was back from the dead. The car companies had lied to us before. Should we believe them? The only way to find out was to go behind enemy lines. For 3 years, we got access to some of the world's most secretive car makers. Let's start with the biggest and baddest of them all. General Motors. Over the last century, GM has churned out over 400 million gas-burning cars and trucks. In the 1990s, they introduced us to the joys of the 10-mile-per-gallon Hummer and the Escalade. But they also tried something truly revolutionary, the EV1, the world's first modern electric car. It was fast, sleek, and powered only by electricity.
First of all, it was the coolest car I ever had. I was taking care of the planet. I wasn't gunking up the air. It was a fantastic ride. It was fast. I'd be zipping along, man, 70, 80 miles an hour, you know, just feeling like $1 million.
But GM lost faith. They rounded up the cars as drivers protested. Then they crushed them and left them for dead.
Pause this. In this Revenge of the Electric Car video, where you see them rounding up them cars and the people protesting, they were being arrested. They were being arrested for protesting these doggone cars being taken off to be crushed. Think about that. The electric cars are too good, folks, and they know it. This is why they're afraid of them.
GM's chief executive, Rick Wagoner, later called it his biggest mistake.
When they took the EV1 away, I went into a depression. I felt like really sad because in the long run, you look back at it, they made a deal. Somebody made a deal to kill the electric car. And, it would have been a cool thing to have. And I still would have been driving it now.
GM had a lot of haters, and interestingly, people with very long memories. They would say they never would buy another GM again.
GM got a lot of bad publicity for the EV1, but here's where we are now.
there's not only a business case for electric cars. There is a compelling business case. There is an inevitability to this technology. It has come so far, so fast, at a time when gasoline and the politics of oil have become increasingly problematic.
I think that when gas prices were high, there was a degree of excitement around electric vehicles that we hadn't seen before.
I'm sick and tired of worrying about gas prices every 6 months. I'm sick and tired of these failed wars in the Middle East. I'm sick and tired of breathing the air that we're breathing. We have the technology. We have the know-how. We are innovative. Let's act like it.
I do not believe this is a problem that is going to be resolved by regulators and bureaucrats. This is a problem that's going to be solved by engineers, innovators, and entrepreneurs.
Sometimes change starts with the most unlikely people.
How are you, Bob?
Pretty good, thanks. Can't complain. Business is lousy, but other than that, everything's fine.
I found out what cigars you like.
Oh, yes,
this guy sure doesn't look like a radical.
Never one to turn down a bribe. And where's the brandy snifter?
Meet Bob Lutz, Mr. Horsepower.
We wouldn't be doing this in California.
Bob is vice chairman of General Motors and their media frontman.
Yeah, right, their eyes are perfect. Chin up a little bit. We need to kind of make you look badass. So
fat ass.
Bad.
Okay.
One of the guys who was blamed for killing off the EV1.
Great. You own fighter jets.
Everybody thinks, whoa, that must cost a lot of money. Actually, they're fairly cheap. And you mean the Obama pose where you sort of looking for divine inspiration?
You're going to kind of like that, maybe.
A threatening pose.
Not too threatening. It's the last thing we want to do right now.
Bob Lutz is a giant of a man. Like, he is just, he's larger than life. I mean, that just...
Bob's been a car guy all his life. He's been vice president of Ford and BMW and president of Chrysler. Never heard of the 3 Series? The Viper? The Ford Explorer? That's Bob.
He has a brilliant mind. He has a brilliant brain when it comes to what an automotive enthusiast wants.
In 2003, 2004, you could not find a person who was more dismissive of electric vehicle technology than Bob Lutz. He thought that there was no business case for it. He thought the people who supported it were lunatics. He did not, and probably still doesn't, believe in global warming. Then, I think, something happened to Bob Lutz. I think he began to see some sort of light.
Well, I do consider myself an environmentalist, and but within reason. In other words, I still realize the benefits of modern automotive transportation. On the other hand, the flood of emails that I got saying, "You rotten SOB, you sold out to the oil companies, and you've killed my grandchildren. I hope you rot in hell."
No one likes to be remembered as an evil or bad person, and certainly he's enough of an egomaniac that that would sting.
We were discussing how Toyota was running away with the technological image and the environmental image and so forth, and I said, well, why don't we at least do an electric prototype? And this was met with a singular absence of enthusiasm on anybody's part. Because the company had lost so much money on EV1.
So Bob's electric car came to a screeching halt. But in a world far away from Detroit, the real rebellion was already underway.
Thank you.
It's launch day for America's newest car company. Drawing inspiration from one of the 20th century's most revolutionary inventors, the father of AC electricity, Nikola Tesla.
Very momentous day for us. It is our first car, and of course it's a car belonging to our first customer, and that would be also our chairman, Elon Musk.
I'm ecstatic. This is fantastic. Awesome day. It feels like victory.
I feel great. It's a great day for Tesla. I got goosebumps since I saw the car roll in.
We've been in development for so long. These feel like they're really our babies.
This is the first production Roadster, and a huge day for the company. Tesla is going to put thousands of these cars on the road. But beyond that, really what matters is, are we making a difference in the world? And for us to make a difference in the world, we have to build a lot of cars. You know, until we see every car on the road being electric, you know, we will not stop. So, you know, this is really just the beginning of the beginning. All right.
Elon Musk is a true believer, and he put, you know, a tremendous amount of his personal prestige and personal wealth into that company.
Well, so far, this is a very expensive car. Call this the $50 million car. That's about the amount of money that I've invested in Tesla. So, it's kind of expensive.
Detroit is doing a lousy job making cars and making money. I mean, it's a disaster. So, you know, the idea that Silicon Valley could do a better job making cars, especially electric cars, is a very powerful one.
We've got Model 2 in development, which we're planning to unveil probably in the second quarter of this year, which is the electric sedan.
Elon's a career troublemaker. He's taken on the banks, the space industry, and now the car companies.
Okay, do you want me to drive it? All right. Sweet.
For me, Elon Musk has always been not really so much a car guy as an entrepreneur. He's had lots of companies in the past. He sold PayPal to eBay.
I just look at what he's accomplished and I'm like, geez, I better start working harder because I'm not making those kind of accomplishments in my life.
It's just a giant kick in the balls to the people that said we couldn't do it and that commercial space doesn't work.
Elon Musk is about as close as you're going to get in real life to Tony Stark. And it shows you how one person can make a difference with a certain amount of smarts and inspiration to change the way people think.
Suddenly there was the Tesla announcement. 200-mile range, 0 to 60 in 4-point-something seconds, 140-mile-an-hour top speed, 6,831 laptop batteries. And I basically said, well, now, wait a minute. I've accepted everybody's arguments of why we can't do this. But here's this small startup company in California, and they think that they can get all of these figures.
Elon's coup was just what Bob needed to drag GM back into the race. They weren't going to be shown up by a bunch of Silicon Valley upstarts.
It was a powerful argument. So whether Tesla is ever hugely successful or not, I'll always owe him a debt of gratitude for having kind of broken the ice.
Bob Lutz being a champion of electric cars is quite a switch from the Bob Lutz we used to know. He sold the board on the fact that this technology would leapfrog Toyota, which had been GM's nemesis.
The electric car was pushed all the way up the ladder by Lutz himself in a way that is very, very personal, a way that suggests he regards it as his legacy at the company.
But the Volt wasn't going to be a pure electric car. That was a step too far for GM. So the company bet on an electric car with a backup gas engine. This would give it more range when the batteries ran out of power. And then, Bob persuaded the company to put the Volt front and center at GM's 100th birthday party.
We're in the executive garage in the basement of the Renaissance Center, and this is the most secure location that we could find in the building. You notice we have plenty of security down here. And here is our baby. It's now my great pleasure to present to you the production version of the Chevrolet Volt. How did it feel driving in an electric car?
It felt great, Chris. I'm surprised you would ask.
Is the electric car back to the dead?
Well, you could argue it wasn't ever dead, because I think people were, even after we recalled the EV1s, there were still electric vehicles out there, but I think it's back with a vengeance, and I would say the electrification of the automobile is a foregone conclusion.
As an analyst and a longtime journalist, I'm still cynical, because we'd seen a lot of concept cars that had kind of hoopla at the auto shows and then faded and died.
Yeah, let's pause this for a second. See, that's the whole doggone thing I've been telling everybody for a long time. You're going to see these technologies out there on the market. Without a doubt, you're going to see them out there. But it's going to be when it's under their control and for their best interest. That's the way business is. They're going to make sure that they're going to be able to make some doggone money off the deal. So, you know, with that said, if you step back and you look at the big picture and see what has been done, what is capable of being done, you might be surprised. Go out there and look at some of these gasoline generators. They're not much different from what's going on, with the exception is people haven't figured out that they could use those generators in a different fashion than they've been using them. And so that they could turn around and instead of just, running the generator and running things direct, use that generator just to charge up power banks. I got a friend that's been off the power grid for a long time. He runs his generators to keep his battery banks running up. He hasn't paid an electric bill in a long time. Of course, the way he's going about it is, he's using more fuel than he wants to be using. And I keep trying to tell him there's an easier way to it. But so far, until I can get that lab finished up and show everybody what it is I'm talking about, he's still going to keep on making the same old mistakes, because he's already been told, just like everybody else has been told, they don't believe it's possible. Oh, there ain't no such thing as free energy. Really? You tell that to the sun, tell that to the wind, tell that to the rivers and oceans and all the different volcanic vents all over the world. You know, when it comes down to an electric car, it is more than possible to build an electric car that will recharge itself with its own motion as it's going down the road. And, of course, you know, that goes against conservation of energy. Oh, you know, you're going to lose too much or whatever. Even if you could extend the range from 100 to 200 miles, that's still better than what you had before. So any improvement is better than no improvement whatsoever. But General Motors first killed the electric car, and then they turned around and brought back their own version, but made it a hybrid electric car so that they could get it to go farther. So when it comes down to it, eventually General Motors will have electric cars. And they don't even have to go all electric. That's what the dirty deed is about the whole thing. That's a dirty little secret about it. They don't even have to go electric in order to have vehicles that are clean running. They just need to re-engineer a few things. These folks out there, I just don't get it. They're supposedly really super smart people. They have incentives to reduce emissions, but not reduce them too much. You know, don't make the electric car too good, and don't make the internal combustion engine too efficient, because if you do, we will lose money. Think about it. The U.S. currency used to be backed by gold. Now it's backed by the petrol dollar. And this is not the only country like that. Well, you think they keep fighting over resources, oil and gas pipelines. because, you know, if you get the doggone electric car, all situated and everything, and maybe a hydrogen engine to run the generator portion of the thing, and now you got all this natural gas and you got all this oil, you can't sell it. So it's in the best interest of all the nations out there to ensure that they put the brakes on these electric vehicles until they figure out a way to get around not getting paid when somebody else is using it. So if you have one of these doggone power plants in your yard and you had your own doggone transformers and stuff like that, and you was able to produce electricity to run your house, and you could do this all year long without ever having to pay a bill, well, somebody in the system ain't getting paid. They're not going to like that too much. And if they don't like that too much, then they're going to figure out ways to punish you for what you're doing. You've seen that in the doggone solar industry. You've seen it in the wind industry. You've seen it in all these supposedly renewable energy industries. Now, there are people out there, you know, trying to fight towards moving towards clean, renewable, alternative energies. And yet even those people are, you know, not taking it to where they could. Not taking it to the extreme because of obvious reasons. When you're dealing with a cartel, a mob mentality such as the energy industry or the auto industry or even the government itself, well, you got to be careful about what you say. You can't just put something out there that's incredibly efficient and then suddenly corner the market, because that would make you too powerful. You'd sell the only products. And so that ain't going to work. They're going to have to figure out a way to shut you down. They've been doing it, folks. Why do you think Stan Myers didn't fare so well? The system was against him. They did not want anybody to know that his technology did what he said it would do. So they've been doing this to alternative energy researchers for a long time. They mocked and ridiculed Tesla, and even to this day still mock and ridicule Tesla, but still wanted to use his technology. Still wanted to benefit from his research and his inventions. Still wanted to benefit from his patents. These folks out there, they knew it. They knew it all along. And how long you've been, each and every one of you, you figure each household out there. Let's say each household only spends $400 or $500 a month for an electric bill. That's a whole lot of money. And that goes to the power company. Of course, some of that goes to the man, because you got to get your little piece of pie if you're the man, right? And so all that money that you, each and every family is pushing out there, you're talking billions if not trillions of dollars just in the energy industry, when in reality, if you was to come together and start building these systems in your community, you could have your own power station. But they put regulations on everything so that you don't do this. You have the technology right now to literally power up your own towns, your own communities. And if you took advantage of that now before they figure out a loophole way around it, you know, they'll use some sort of safety or environmentalist law, whatever, in order to ensure that you can't do this. It's time for the people to stand up and demand, just flat out demand, to be left alone. While we build the future, the real future, not the future that they want for you, where you simply are microchipped and tracked everywhere you go. You can't even get on the doggone internet without somebody snooping on you, for Pete's sake. You can't go out into public without all these cameras in your face, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Wherever you go, somebody knows about it. You can't just buy you a piece of land and own it without having to worry about the system wanting to steal it from you if you don't pay taxes on it. So do you truly ever own anything? When it comes down to energy, energy is free. I don't care how many of these so-called educated idiots out there want to try to quote the laws of physics, which they don't even really understand. They don't even understand the mechanics of how things work. So how can they sit there and tell somebody like me who paid attention in science class that I don't know what the heck I'm talking about? If I don't know what the heck I'm talking about, why are these folks so nervous? Why are they always out there trying to shut down people that come across ways to make things run better and more efficiently? It was flat out, plain and simple. They want to make money. They want to stay in power. And the educated idiots out there, the college indoctrinated goons that come rolling up out there thinking they're really smart and the so-called environmentalists, they love the planet, right? Let's save the planet, right? We're going to save us from global warming / climate change or climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up. But yet their actions aren't nowhere near where they should be because their actions are out there protesting in the street, making ridiculous fools out of themselves instead of standing beside guys like Stan Myers or John Bedini or all the different alternative energy researchers out there that were trying to show how nature actually uses electricity. They didn't care about all that. No, they wanted to sit out there and try to force the government into forcing you to pay more money if you drive a gasoline car. So it ain't like you ain't already broke already. If you're the average Joe, you're the working poor. And that's plain and simple. But these environmentalists out there, they're the scourge of the nation. They're the scourge of the world because they think they stand on a moral high ground while driving these particular vehicles or riding in buses or whatever to get to the protest, and they're out there with their signs talking about save the planet while they're trashing the streets. Same old ridiculousness. It's just a hypocrisy in its finest. The government, all the senators and congressmen, and, you know, even the presidents of the United States are hypocrites. The hypocrisy of all that what they do. You know, and talk about saving the environment while out drone striking some other nation and kicking up a bunch of crud in the air and destroying people's infrastructures. And for what? For the same oil that they're complaining is killing the planet anyway? Really? There's a whole lot of people in this world that did not pay attention in science class. It's blatantly obvious. If you can't see that, I don't know what to tell you. But the only way that this is ever going to get resolved is if somehow or another we can pull our resources and we can get one of those drivetrains and put the system together and build an entire house that is so credibly energy efficient and show the world without being shut down before we get around to showing everybody what it is that we're trying to teach them about. That's the thing. Everybody has to have, oh, you got to show me. That's right. They want to see it. Okay. Well, if one person can't afford to do it, then a whole bunch of people are going to have to come together to do it. Otherwise, it ain't going to get done. How can you show somebody something that you don't have the resources to build? You can explain the technology. You can explain the solutions and all the things that are available. All the different types of ways and the energy you can use. And never once defy any of the known laws of physics. But how you get that out there to the masses? That's a good question right there. I've been trying to do that for years. For many, many, many years I've been trying to tell people. And you have to try to do it incrementally. You can't just come out and say it unless you got an actual over-unity device or free energy device or whatever to put on the table, and you're willing to allow anybody and his brother to come out and measure it and all this kind of stuff. But the moment they find out that, hey, this thing really does work, then you become a target. You know, I may have been born at night, but it wasn't last night. I'm not stupid, so I know what I'm doing. I'm taking and proceeding with caution because I'm not going to be a John Bedini or Stan Myers. I'm not going to go by the wayside. I'm not going to shut up about it. They're going to call me crazy. They're going to try to suppress everything I say for the rest of my life. They're going to try to make it look like I don't know what I'm talking about. And even people in my own circle that are supposedly highly educated, oh, that'll never work, but do it this way, don't do it that way. And I'm sitting there trying to tell them, don't try to re-engineer something that I'm trying to give you for free. Just try it before you deny it. Even an engine that would run on pure distilled water is more than possible. And it doesn't defy any of the laws of physics. It takes all the best of technology that we've got and uses it in conjunction to use the laws of physics to your advantage. But every time I try to share this with people, even in my own circle, they're always like, oh no, you gotta do this, this isn't gonna work because you got this problem and that problem. And I explain to them, that's not a problem because you got this over here as well. And they just can't see it because they've been indoctrinated to not believe it's possible. And they have a terrible misunderstanding of the laws of physics. They have a terrible misunderstanding of mechanics. They swear up and down. They get mad. They get frustrated because they can't see it. You just think you know it all. And no, it's not that. The fact is, we have the technology necessary. You got to put this piece of the puzzle with that piece of the puzzle, and then you get this particular device and these particular results. That's the simple of it. But doing it by yourself, doing it without the resources of these companies like Tesla or General Motors or anything like that, and then trying to get it out there, trying to be able to advertise it to the world, the moment you make that noise on that scene and you've got a working product, well, you're in trouble. Flat out. They'll come and get you. That's the way it works. That's the way it's been working. You step on their wallet one time. That's all it takes. So that's why I'm saying, if it's ever going to get done, it's going to be because the people want it done. It's going to be because the people demand it. It's going to be because the doggone environmentalists stop wasting time and being hypocrites and get out there and start supporting people like myself and other people out there who are bringing the solutions to the table. You know, as long as I've been doing this, you would think there would be more people interested in doing it. But everybody's talk. They're all talk and no action. And then you've got crooks like Keshi running around there talking all kinds of crazy stuff, claiming to be the Messiah, that, he's out there scamming people out of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars, and people are falling for it. And then it turns around and it gives everyone else in alternative energy a bad name. It gives everyone else who believes in free energy a bad name. And so once everybody's got a bad name, well, that just helps the system even more. Because it's easy to say, oh, Shaziz is crazy. That's easy. Because as long as they believe I'm crazy, then I'm not even a threat. It's when I become a threat, when I prove what it is that I say, that I will become a threat. That's the whole thing. I promised the power company that I was going to study everything that there is to know about alternative energy. And when I got that accomplished, I was going to share it with everybody and his brother for free. What you do with that information from that point on, it's up to you. And, when it comes down to building a device, I'll give you the ideas. I'll give you the ideas hand over fist. You can try them out. If they don't work, we'll troubleshoot them. We'll figure out what's gone wrong. But the thing is, it ain't going to happen until you try it. There are existing equipment right now to this very day that you're using in your house that can already be turned into generators. And if you're not using that electricity in the conventional sense, then you don't have to worry about the old mathematics, the current watts and amps scene, which is another one of the things that got me in trouble for telling everybody that I don't care about current watts and amps. I care about how that energy is moving. I care about something different that I've been trying to show everybody. Plasma technology will be a thing of the future. It already is. They've got plasma cutters that'll cut through steel. And they got plasma reactors that do all kinds of amazing things. And the first plasma reactor was back in the late 1800s, called a mercury arc rectifier. If they'd have known back then what we know now about that particular device, they would have been working on that all along. Because the technology is amazing. And it has to do with electricity. And it don't require near the amount of electricity that you would think in order to get that thing going. Maybe at the very first, with the mercury arc rectifier, you would have to have a lot of current in order to heat that thing up to make a dead short to get that mercury to vaporize. But the moment that mercury was vaporized, just a steady AC current inside there and enough voltage would keep that energized into the fourth state of matter being plasma. And so now modern day, we're using all the different types of noble gases, helium, argon, xenon, you name it. And we got fluorescent lighting. We got these nifty looking fluorescent signs with different colors and stuff like that. Neon signs. It's mind blowing. But see, I'm the type of guy that whenever I see something, I think about all the different potential uses for it that may not necessarily have been designed to do to begin with. Guys like Tesla are lucky. They're lucky individuals who have enough money, enough financial backing in order to be able to get as far as they did. Tesla has a really beautiful looking car. That's a sports car. It's a nice looking car. And they can make even more. Doggone Koenigsegg built a gasoline with an electric transmission. And it holds the production land speed record. So, you know, it can be done. And if you took that same engine that he's running now and did some re-engineering to it, you could make that engine so incredibly efficient that it'd be mind-blowing. So, why we're not using hydrogen technology? Why we're not all electric? Why we're not doing whatever? Well, you gotta take a look at the facts and you'll understand why we're not doing it. Now, General Motors is back in the game because Tesla basically forced their hand. Tesla was going to show everybody that, look, yeah, you've got an electric car that not only looks good, but it's really, you know, efficient. And so, you know, can't have Tesla beating out GM, right? So they put the Chevy Bolt out there. And when and if there's something that goes on where these cars are too doggone good that it affects their bottom line, they'll crush them too. Every single time that the system puts something out there that's too good, they'll try to call it a safety hazard and recall it and get you to turn it back in. So, you know, I'm not stupid. I know what's going on out here. Let's listen to a little bit more of this.
Some people aren't going to wait around for corporations. Around the world, an underground movement is growing. These people are making their own electric cars, right here and right now.
I'm Gadget. I've been living and working in this warehouse for 16 years, and then for the last couple of years I've been doing electric cars. What I do is I take a car and I change it from gas power to electric. It's a lot greener to take an existing car rather than making a new one from scratch. I've got a Triumph Spitfire, a GT6, and a 67 Camaro. My latest project is a 356 Porsche Speedster.
We got married, we're building our future together in this building, and
we just finished our prototype, lithium ion, over 120 miles of range.
Finally, we've got something real here. This is the future, you know, and it's attainable, and we can all have one.
I can't wait to drive this around and show it off to people.
There are thousands of gadgets out there. Together, they're a force which could potentially rival the big car companies.
It's 0 to 60 in about 6 seconds, which is, you know, good for a little commuter car. It's really half the price of a Tesla. Not as fast as a Tesla, but it'll be a really good commuter car.
But for the big players, the stakes tonight are even higher. This is the first time GM has faced the electric car community since the EV1 disaster.
This is the halo for us. Hopefully, we're going to use this to win back and recapture the hearts and minds of the American car buying public. We've got to. I'm not Darth Vader. I'm not a bad guy. I'm not a liar. I'm a father. I'm a dad. I'm a husband that really cares about doing the right thing. And the only way to get people to believe me is to talk like that, right?
And now they've got Tesla biting at their heels, too.
Tesla is definitely the star of the show. You look at the two cars, there's not really any competition.
The Tesla has a very high price point. I know that there's some sort of battery issues going on with the Tesla, so it's different. It's in its own little category. The Chevy Volt is going to be something that's much more affordable compared to the Tesla for everyday consumers to purchase.
That is gorgeous.
It is gorgeous, but it's $100,000. But we need something that everyone can afford. The
Now, he said, we need something that everyone can afford. Now, here's the problem with that particular statement. Was Chevy's able to build a cheaper car, and so they're going to hope that their cheaper cars are going to be able to beat out Tesla. But the deal is, if you got behind Tesla, if everyone who believed in electric cars got behind Tesla and financially backed him, he would be able to compete with General Motors price-wise. It costs so much money to make these doggone cars because you're only making so many. If you understand anything about industry, that whenever you go out there, you got to buy so many parts. And you got to buy enough quantity to get those parts down cheaper. Well, if you're just building prototypes are the most expensive part of the process. And so if you don't get enough people buying into or investing into your deal, well, then all these parts are obviously going to cost a lot more. That's why Tesla's car isn't necessarily a lesser car. It actually is a better car, a better product than what General Motors done, but it's more expensive because of the way that he had to go about manufacturing this car. That's the difference. If you look over out there, you look at the Chevy Camaro as opposed to the Ford Mustang or the Dodge or whatever, you think of all these different cars, all the different brands out there. These are really nice looking cars. They're really well built. Their engineering needs a little bit, and I could go into that. I've been into that before, but nonetheless, they're able to sell those cars cheaper because they're able to mass produce them and get the parts cheaper, and because they have a lot of in-house manufacturing capabilities where they don't have to necessarily buy parts somewhere else. They can build them. They got robotic equipment. They're ahead of the game. But if Tesla had everything, every advantage that all these major companies like GM and Ford and all the rest of them, if they had the same backing that they had, then those cars would be cheap as well. So a $100,000 car might cost you $20,000 when it's all said and done. But nonetheless, you can see what I'm saying. So this is why that statement, I had to pause and let you hear that.
Yeah, just because it's practical, but that one speaks to me because it's fast and cool. Put me down for one of each.
It is very good to have something that is a stopgap for General Motors to ultimately cut the umbilical cord of fossil fuels and get really onto electricity. And if that means that we have some competition, good. It's good for us.
I love having GM here. You know, the fact that they've got a range extended electric, if people drive that car and find that they never fuel it up, that means that they'll realize that they don't need a gas car. They can go pure electric. So it's a stepping stone.
So it's coming. It's just
by now,
a matter how it
we
gets
were behind
here.
Enemy lines. 5 years ago, we would have been arrested trying to get in here. Now, we were Bob's guests. The question was, who was playing who? Had Bob become a true believer? Or was he just stringing us along?
This is one of the old Malibus, but it was dimensionally close enough that we could put all the Volt hardware underneath it. Today, I was supposed to drive it a few feet. I hit the start button and nothing happened. Recycled it and said, okay, now it'll work, and hit the start button again and nothing happened. And then finally somebody hit upon the fact that it was still plugged in. and it is programmed not to run with the when it's plugged in. So we disconnected it, and then it ran fine. I've driven a lot of things during my long career, and did drive a fully electric car lap after lap after lap around the grounds here. I really had the feeling of it being a historic moment. Certainly was in my career.
If a technology can win over a doubter like Bob Lutz, it can win over a lot of people, a lot of consumers.
I think what we're witnessing now is probably the most significant revolution of our lifetime in autos.
These are not hobbies. These are people responsible to shareholders. They can't afford a hobby. They need to make this a winner. This is real scale, industrial innovation and deployment.
The goal of Tesla is really to go to mass market as soon as we can. We want to make this technology and electric cars affordable to as many people as possible.
We're going to have to get the lithium-ion technology together. We're going to have to work the integration between the gas engine and the lithium-ion battery pack. We're going to have to do all of that because we want to launch in the fall of 2010.
Someone just has to get a car out there and start selling it, and then other companies will have to fill the void. But somebody's got to be the first one out there.
We have copper wires coming from Finland. The electric motor is made out of our facilities in Taiwan. So my job is to make sure that we can produce to our production schedule.
I have plans and backup plans and sometimes backup plans to those backup plans. And I'm always worried about what I'm missing. What have I not thought of? What has the team not thought of that's going to trip us up in the next 2 years?
I try and keep as much of the entire car and as much of the entire powertrain as I can in my head so that I can communicate with all the different groups and teams and direct our work and where people are headed.
From an automotive perspective, Tesla has an absolutely brilliant idea, which is creating a fast electric car. Unfortunately, the reality is that it takes a lot of work to build a vehicle.
You know, you can't give Tesla a pass just because their product happens to be cute electric cars.
I don't know if General Motors can make a desirable plug-in hybrid car. The company has been damaged in so many ways in terms of the brand, in terms of their human capital. I don't know what the Volt's going to be like.
It's a race. It's a total race, and we know where GM is in the race. Looks like it could be the winner in it, but we don't know what everybody else is up to.
Every revolution needs its Napoleon, its master strategist. The world's most formidable car mogul was about to enter the EV race. It was time to meet the Emperor.
There is no give in that man. There is no dream in that man. He's not a visionary. He is a capitalist. An enormously controlled, driven, desperately smart man who measures success, indeed life, by dollars and euros. Carlos Ghosn doesn't get up in the morning unless there's money in it. I recommend you go meet Carlos Ghosn and administer sodium pentothal. I want to know what this guy knows. I want to know how many chassis they're going to put this electric architecture into. How flexible is it? How much does it weigh? How scalable is it? I want to know exactly how they plan to make money.
Okay, so who's leading the meeting?
Yeah. Just a quick recap on the progress we have made getting the conversation started in the global marketplace for Nissan on zero emissions and electric vehicles.
When people express doubts about electric car, I think we should not go very heavy on this. We should say, yeah, maybe there are some concerns, we're working on them, and say, what? I don't want to wake up competition. Mm-hmm. I don't want to wake up competition. Because the more we are progressing, we are investing in batteries, we are investing in cars, it takes a lot of time, a lot of money. They didn't start. So every day they don't start is a good day for us. Our big difference is it's affordable.
Yes.
And it's mass marketed. That means you're going to be able to find it in every country, at every dealership you want.
You know, the Japanese are famously averse to saying no directly. That is not Ghosn's problem. Look at how he made his reputation. He was the axe man at Nissan.
When Carlos Ghosn took over Nissan, Nissan was on its knees. It was almost out of business.
He made a reputation as being this sort of terribly, terribly deliberate, driven, unsentimental guy. You know, 5 years ago, Ghosn wasn't talking about electric cars. It's remarkable the transition that has happened in the past 5 or 6 years, when not only have they decided to go into the EV market, they have based their whole company strategy on it.
Well, we knew Nissan was working on lithium-ion batteries, and they have been working on that for many years. But I think it came as quite a surprise when Mr. Ghosn announced their very aggressive strategy in electric cars.
We didn't have truth serum, but we did have access and inside intelligence. Carlos was going to outflank his rivals with the Leaf, a pure electric car with a 100-mile range, priced for the widest possible market.
My nephew's crazy about Leaf.
Right.
Actually,
the young generation is absolutely
I'm gonna skip past this one here, but if you want to watch this particular video, it's called Revenge of the Electric Car Documentary. I posted all these videos over there in the Super chat room, so you can add them to a playlist or something like that, watch them at your leisure. But the whole thing is, if you listen, it's coming. All these electric cars are coming. But I'm telling you right now that there's a whole lot more than just an electric car at stake in this game right here, because they're going to literally put in your hands the capability of using your own electrical power plant. That car is going to be your future power plant for your house. And so you ain't going to need all these wires stretched out all over the place. The power industry understands that their days is numbered, and is trying to figure out all different types of ways to keep you, part of the system, part of the grid. But the reality is that these cars have the power to do what they've been doing, and the capability. There are techniques right now where you could take them lithium-ion batteries, and you could get them lithium-ion batteries to not go bad. To literally only be there just to supplement the system. By putting a buffer before the battery and after the battery, to where that you're not directly draining from them batteries, and you're not directly charging to them batteries, and you just allow that energy to skim right over the top just to keep them topped off. They're only there as a backup at that point. We have the technology to do that, and I aim to prove it. So when it's all said and done, I'm getting my lab together, which is taking me time, because once again, it's a financial issue, because, life is expensive. But I'm not out here trying to, rally the troops, hey, give me money or anything like that. I'm taking my time, I'm getting it done, because, I want to be able to say that I didn't have everybody backing me up whenever I showed them what I showed them. So, I ain't trying to sell you anything. I'm just trying to point out some stuff. And if they get to it before I get to it, they'll just prove my point for me, which is just as well otherwise. So, it's coming. But, I want to play a couple more things, because this is kind of a reiteration of what I've been saying. This is killing the electric car.
As the price of petrol goes through the roof, you're looking at the future of motoring, the electric car.
It's your own fuel station, isn't it, really?
It's my own fueling station. Very convenient.
At least, that's what electric car evangelist Linda Nichols believes.
Yes, please. So where are we going to go?
I'm not sure. We'll just go where the road takes us.
Okay. We're running, are we?
Yes.
We're running?
Yes, we're running.
It's pretty quiet, isn't it?
Yes.
Linda bought her all-electric Toyota RAV4 a decade ago. California wanted to reduce smog and forced its car companies to produce zero-emission vehicles.
One of the things I think I enjoy most is the quiet, no-vibration, peaceful ride. I feel very empowered by driving this car. I'm no longer a gasoline junkie.
Linda says her car is a dream come true. When she gets home, she simply plugs it in and recharges the batteries. In a few hours, she'll have enough power to drive about 150 kilometres.
And that's it?
That's it.
Her total electricity bill for the house and two electric cars is an astonishing $2 a month. That's because she's covered her roof in solar panels. They generate so much electricity, she sells power back to the grid when she's not plugged in. She says that if she charged her car directly from the grid, it would still only cost the equivalent of 20 cents per litre of petrol.
The beauty of electricity, it's cleaner, it's cheaper, and this is very important, it's domestically produced. And no war has ever been fought for electricity, and even more particularly, no war has ever been fought for solar, and it never will be.
This is a free solar-powered public charging station in Los Angeles. One of a network of stations developed in the 90s to support electric vehicles.
This is one of those electric chargers.
Right.
In fact, basically just push a button in the car, and it opens up the charging port right here.
Chris Payne is another electric car enthusiast, but his is the only electric car there. The rest are conventional cars using it as a parking station.
And that's it.
That's it. We used to joke that it only takes 3 seconds to charge an electric car. But I'll want to leave this here for 45 minutes at least to like get a good pop.
If you think all this sounds too good to be true, then you're right. Chris Payne is a documentary maker, and his latest feature is Who Killed the Electric Car?
In 1996, electric cars began to appear on roads all over California. They were quiet and fast, produced no exhaust, and ran without gasoline.
It tells the incredible story of how, after rising to the challenge of producing electric cars in the 90s, California makers dumped the idea soon after.
Keeping America competitive requires affordable energy. And here we have a serious problem. America is addicted to oil.
It's only this year that the American government has realized that driving around in gas-guzzling tanks that depend on foreign oil is not the smartest energy policy.
An electric car says we can use our own energy to power our cars. We don't need to go defend oil in the Middle East. So the fact that the electric car was killed at this moment in history is sort of a double crime.
The star of the film is the EV1, an all-electric two-seater, put on the market by General Motors in 1996. It was futuristic, fast, and by all accounts, adored by all who drove it.
Believe it or not, that sucker goes. That thing will take you down the PCH so fast you could get a ticket.
I did kind of feel like that, you know, that sort of like, whee! And the way it takes off out of the cave. You know, I have this gate that opens and I go,
CD1 in particular was really special just because it was really cool and fast and fun to drive. And one of the things that GM did so right when they set out to make that car was to absolutely shatter the golf cart myth when it comes to electric cars. You
had this Chelsea Sexton was part of the General Motors sales team for the EV1. She's now an activist in a campaign to promote electric cars. According to her, General Motors abandoned the EV1 because it threatened the big players in the industry.
And what GM didn't count on was those cars being so good, they would absolutely challenge the status quo of the auto industry, of the oil industry.
Chris Payne's documentary says that General Motors never really believed in the EV1 and didn't promote its clean, green advantages. In effect, it murdered its own baby.
We made every effort to make a business out of the EV1. We don't spend in excess of $1 billion to set a vehicle up for failure.
Dave Barthmas is manager of public relations at General Motors and says that far from a conspiracy to kill off the electric car, there was simply no mass market for it.
You could only go roughly 100 miles or so before you had to recharge it. And then it took roughly 4 to 8 hours to recharge the vehicle. And for something like that to work for a mass market, you really had to adapt your lifestyle to meet the needs of the vehicle versus a vehicle that's going to meet your needs.
But according to Chelsea Sexton, General Motors was just not committed to making the electric car a success.
My experience, to sell a car with an ad, you need to show a picture of the car in the ad. Tell people where to go to see it. You have some little facts about the car. That sort of thing helps when you're trying to sell a product. And that stuff was just gone from the advertising. So, yeah, certainly we got indications along the way that they weren't as sincere about this as they'd have people believe.
In the film, people who were working for GM even said they felt after a year or so that the heart wasn't in GM to continue on with this. They felt it. They weren't getting the support. They weren't getting the advertising or the marketing of it. It was as if you were forced into by the government to do this.
Well, I tell you, there are a lot of emotions within General Motors about the EV1, certainly. It was not an easy decision for us to come to end production and marketing. It was not easy for us to spend well over $1 billion and not recoup our investment. It wasn't easy for us to develop award-winning advertising, set up a unique sales and service force, to have a vehicle that ultimately only generated 800 leases. So, in essence, we did everything that we could to grow the market in California, no matter how disappointed and angry some people are over our decision to end production and marketing. There are simply two sides to every story.
Documentary maker Chris Payne concedes that the number of miles in a battery charge was a problem for the EV1 sales.
And a lot of consumers said, no, I don't want a car that only goes 100 miles on a charge. I need something that goes 300 miles on charge. I have a long way to drive. Well, it turns out that most people, especially commuters, but the national average in the States is even everybody, the average miles that you drive a day is 30. So a car that can go 60 miles or 100 miles a day really can work as a perfect second car. In my case, it became like a primary car, very fast. And then you have that gas car for those rare times you really do need the range.
While new and better batteries are in the pipeline, GM says there's still a long way to go.
I have not seen a auto company come out with a battery program that has a vehicle that will have the kind of range and quick charge that's needed to appeal to a mass market at a price point where the common man and woman can afford it on a monthly basis.
Electric car enthusiasts scoff at the affordability arguments.
I'm going to pause that because they ain't seen it yet because they ain't talked to a person like myself who could sit there and show them how to get more range out of them batteries, how to get those doggone motors to stay cooler and so on down the line. Been trying to point it out forever and a day. It's actually going to take me to show it with a physical prototype on there that, you know, when it's time, I'll be having people come to test it and measure it. I've already got people lined up that's going to come and test it and measure it and verify everything when I'm done. But until I get to that point there, it's just we're doing what we're doing. You know, these folks out there, they know that there's a better way to do these things. You know, but maybe there's a certain few things that they missed along the way. And I can fill in those gaps. There are the people that can fill in those gaps, but they're just not listening.
They point out that at the same time the EV1 was dropped, GM was busy promoting the most expensive and biggest gas guzzler of them all, the Hummer.
I know that there are charges made that we killed the electric vehicle program in order to create the Hummer or be able to afford and pursue the Hummer program. Again, there is no conspiracy to cut off the electric vehicle because we wanted to pursue heavier and larger vehicles. People did not demand EV1 from GM in large enough numbers for us to pursue it.
The Hummer was the ultimate SUV. And in fact, when it came out, you could get up to $100,000 tax deduction if you were a small business owner for owning one. So the government gave a message to the people. The message was, buy these huge monstrosities. Meanwhile, the electric car, when they were on the road, the maximum tax credit you could get was $4,000. So this is how government shapes the future. And unfortunately, the American government was pushing Hummers, and no wonder in some ways the car companies walked away from EVs and concentrated on these Hummers.
For the electric car activists like Linda Nichols, the battle is not over. Even though the dream of the EV1 has been lost, the final nail in the coffin came in 2004 when GM trucked away the last of the EV1s to be crushed. Linda and other activists managed to save their cars from the shredder.
This picture was taken in Arizona at GM's proving grounds. What you see here is the crusher actively involved in flattening these beautiful little EV1s that are stacked up like so many cords of wood, flattened into useless Coke cans and shredded into a million pieces. These EV1 cars represented a reality that was working and that can work again and needs to work again and will work again. These cars are not dead. Electric cars are just temporarily unavailable. The dream is still alive.
Why did you then recall all the cars and crush them?
Yep.
Why did you do this?
Well, first, we did not recall the vehicles early. Everybody signed a 3-year lease agreement and agreed to what was going to happen at the end of the 3 years as far as turning the vehicle back into General Motors. Yes, the other half of the coin is those vehicles were then sent to the recycler. Now, part of the recycling process involves crushing the stripped body so that it can be shredded and all the various metals could be separated for recycling use. Now, the reason that we did not want to leave the vehicle in the hands of owners after the lease expiration is because we did not have a significant amount of parts to keep the vehicles running safe. There are 2,000.
So you made up your mind at this stage you weren't going to make a spare parts division for that car.
We simply did not have enough parts to keep those vehicles on the road going in a safe manner. We felt it was not the right thing to do to allow a vehicle to be left in someone's hands that we didn't have the confidence we needed to know that it would be operated in a safe manner.
The idea of a car maker producing a new model without spare parts sounds almost as implausible as the policy that allowed new cars to be destroyed. In Chris Payne's documentary, a reporter happened across some Honda electric cars just as they were about to be shredded.
And what's interesting, the first thing we noticed when we drove up here, you're going to be shredding some new cars here, too. These look like perfectly good cars. Why are you shredding them up?
A little bit of a mystery, really, since I've been here the last 8 years. They bring us these cars from the dealerships, and they say that they're test cars, and they've been brought over to test various emissions, and the insurance companies won't reinsure them, so they have to watch them destroyed here.
Boy, that seems like a shame.
It's terrible.
I'd like to drive off in one of these things. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the sound of a crushed automobile being shredded into a million pieces.
What a waste.
The death of the electric car has left the market to enthusiasts like John Wayland.
You know, it's why burn gasoline when you can run on American electrons?
Exactly.
No petrol since 1980.
He and his friends have converted their old petrol cars to electric power.
All batteries. The whole car is batteries, Sharon. Did you hear him turn it on? It's silent.
What's wrong with that car over there?
It's got a gasoline engine. That won't start.
This is cute.
And these are all the batteries?
There's, and the whole front end's stuck with them, too.
What do you think?
I think it's pretty cool.
Have you seen one before?
No. No, I have not. Not full electric. And I love the way he's got it in an old Datsun.
Did you know that the GM and the big companies were going to make them at one stage and stop making them?
No, I didn't. But, you know, if they make these, then that puts a whole bunch of millionaires out of business, doesn't it?
I want to drive it.
So what do you think of it?
I like it.
What's going on here today?
Now we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 electric cars on charge right now.
Cool.
All at the same time. It's the Wayland EV juice bar. You know, this is where you come to suck amps.
Yeah, right.
This is Suck Amp Central. If you're looking here right now, this is the mighty Zilla Z2K.
What's that do?
That is the motor controller that divides the amperage from the batteries to the motor. In other words, it's a speed controller. It's like a giant light dimmer, only this one happens to be a 600,000 watt dimmer, 0.6 megawatts.
Right.
Yeah, it's a lot of juice.
This is the zombie.
This is the white zombie. This happens to be the world's quickest street legal electric door slammer. If you notice, it too has a Zilla controller, a mighty Z2K.
Mm-hmm.
Came from the factory with 69 horsepower and about 70 foot-pounds of torque. It now has about 300 horsepower and 772 foot-pounds of torque. Because it has so much torque, we don't need a transmission. Electric motors have full torque at zero RPM, and they have an abundant amount of torque.
So what do you do here with your electric cars? You've been involved with them for 25 years. You've got your friends around here today, tuned them up for a bit of racing tonight. What's behind all that?
Well, first of all, we don't want to wait for Detroit or Toyota or Nissan. We're not going to wait. We convert our own cars in our backyard. It's not that hard. As long as you can turn a wrench, know a little bit about electricity, you take out all that pollution belching stuff out, you put in electric motor, a motor controller, charger, a little bit of hard work, and you get yourself an electric car. It's not that hard to do. So what we're doing today, though, is that we've turned into, we call ourselves evangelists with a capital EV. We like to show the general public that the electric car isn't dead. Every time we hear these negative spins going on, we hear news reports that are inaccurate, we like to show people, well, I'm sorry, you're being misinformed.
John Wayland and his mates are obsessed by the same passions as other car nuts, power and speed. Tonight, they're off to that mecca of rev heads, the drag racing track.
This car will be racing tonight. It runs a very quick 12.1 seconds in the quarter mile and generally jerks the tires off the ground, keeps them up in the air for about 50 feet on launch.
All on electricity?
All on electricity, man. It's the amps, you know. We've got the amps.
John's little white Datsun, with a mighty Zilla power converter under the bonnet, is about to show a petrol car a thing or two.
And we're outlining our favorite electric car, the right lane. Bring the out there, right? Bang, bang, bang. Bang, bang, bang.
The EV enthusiasts have obviously solved the power problem. They also say they now have a battery that will last between 4 and 500 kilometres without a charge. But is anybody in Detroit or Washington, D.C. really listening?
Nope. That's the whole thing. It was the average Joe that got the thing going. It's the average Joe out there in their garage building these conversions from homemade to from what they were initially with the internal combustion engine to electric, all electric, and all electric that are faster than the doggone cars that are all gas. So, you know, when I said earlier, I said electric cars are too good. They're way too good. And that's why General Motors crushed the EV1. That's why other ones are crushing ones that they don't want out there in the public. Folks, if you think about what these cars are capable of doing, being able to carry the whole entire body, the weight of the batteries, and its passengers, whatever luggage or whatever else they got in the car, and travel them on down the road for 100 miles at the very least, and they said up to 450 to 500 miles just on the new batteries that they were talking about. Imagine you don't have that car body anymore, and all you have is a set of generator heads that are connected to the drivetrain. So when you fire this thing up, you're charging up a power bank that is running these generators that is producing the AC current necessary to charge a transformer and keep your house running constantly. And with a few different tricks of physics and existing technology, you can extend the life of these batteries to incredible lengths. Because if that battery is not carrying the load, if that battery is there just a supplement to keep the power steady, and you're pushing the load off of something else that is able to charge and discharge rapidly like batteries are not able to do. Batteries have a good strong power, and they can send the current out, but you don't need that much power if you understand how to use it. And from that point, when you're draining those batteries down, you're draining directly off of those batteries. Well, that means you got to charge that battery back up. And they're just not capable because of the way that they're designed to charge rapidly. It takes a little while to charge them. And if you're pulling more power before, then it takes even longer to charge them. So at the very least, you could get one that you could actually put some juice back to it while you're going, but you wouldn't be able to get it to keep up with the demand of the power. But if you understood a few things about what I've been trying to share with people, if you had a buffer before and after every single generator to the load, between the generator to the batteries, between the batteries to the load, and then you had something else that was carrying that load, then you wouldn't have to worry about that battery going dead. And you could take and utilize that energy off of that to do amazing things. They're using DC current, but you could also use AC current as well. And so you could build the equivalence of a miniature transformer like you see on the power pole, that you could pulse that transformer and run out some really seriously high AC current out the other side that you could shove into an electric motor and get that thing to go to extreme speeds. So it's not about we don't have the technology available. It's about the cooperation with everybody wanting to not work together in order to get the resolutions, to resolve it. It's that doggone simple. It's so ridiculously simple. It makes my brain hurt to sit around and think, why? Why these folks keep doing this stuff? Even in the racing industry, these folks out there, they're pretty intelligent. They do a lot of good stuff, but they could get them cars to perform so much better on so less fuel if they would just pay attention. But they think they know it all. They think they have the laws of physics down. And there are a lot of, like I said, educated idiots that come out of college that think they're so smart, but in reality, they have no common sense. And they're constantly misquoting the laws of physics. They're constantly telling you what is not possible because you can never get out more than you put in. You don't need to get out more than you put in if you're using it efficiently, if you're using it in the proper manner. You know, so this is the deal. And every bit of losses that they claim aren't losses at all. If you utilize them, what they claim to be losses, then you could actually get these things to perform way better than what they already do. So, I don't know. You tell me. You think it's an accident that these folks in the industry out there keep crushing good technology? You think it's an accident that the internal combustion engine is still the dominant force, even while they still say that the doggone climate is changing because of carbon emissions? It's all a lie. The whole fossil fuel thing is a lie. There is no such thing as fossil fuel. You can argue with me till you're blue in the face. I don't care. I know where you got your education from, the government indoctrination centers. I know where you got your science from. I studied the same science. I studied the same indoctrination. I know what you're talking about. I'm not stupid. But the thing about it is, the difference between you and I is I stepped outside the box. I stepped back and I looked at the big picture. You're still stuck in the box. You got your nose so stuck in the school, and you got the whole parroting thing down to the T, where you can say Polly won a cracker every chance you get and sound like you know what you're talking about. Well, you can say Polly won a cracker all you want. But if you ain't got the common sense to step outside that box and question the norm, wait a second, how are you going to get any new advancements if you're still stuck in the past? In reality, the people in the past were a whole lot smarter than you because they thought outside the box. And they actually had electric cars back then. And they could have got those electric cars to do a lot more back then. And to this very day, I would love to get a hold of one of those old electric cars. Because everything that I've learned in the process of doing this mad science and all my research through all these years, I learned a few things. And those electric cars were just as good back then as they would be right now. Those same electric motors would still run to this very day. They'd probably run better because they were built better. And guaranteed they'd last longer. But there are electric motors out there that are getting really good. They're really super capable, and not only are these electric motors, permanent magnet, brushless motors, not only are they motors, but they can also be used as generators as well. So you can take some standard off-the-shelf paraglider motors, and you can turn one of them into a generator. You just got to understand the internal circuitry, that the internal circuitry is made to not do what I'm telling you. You have to re-engineer it a little bit, but you don't have to rewind it. The thing is, a lot of these different things, like the washing machine motors, they're brushless DC motors, but they're generators. You have to understand how they work, and go out and look. You'll find YouTube videos where people turn Samsung or Fisher & Paykel direct drive washing machine motors into generators. Watch out some of the arcs that they're pulling off these things. You don't have to rewind them. There's no need to rewind them. If you're pulling that AC current off and you're using it properly, all you're going to do is take that AC current and use it to pressurize a container like a transformer, and use that current to run whatever it is you want to run on the other side. Change it from AC to DC, however you want to work it. There's so many different options available. But the simple of it is, you can't get nobody involved long enough to get anything accomplished. You try. Yeah, heck, I've been trying to pull the dream team together for a long time when it comes to alternative energy. Get all these researchers to come together and work on these things together. Out there arguing over which alternative method is the best. Well, what about all of them being the best? What about all of them being pieces of the puzzle? And you put those pieces of the puzzle in the right order, and guess what? You got it accomplished. Exactly what you wanted to do, you got it done. So anyway, I'm going to play a bit of this very last one down here.
Tesla is suing the Ontario government. The electric automaker claims it was targeted by the Doug Ford government's cancellation of the rebate for electric vehicles. The rebate was worth up to $14,000. It was shut down last month. It was all financed through the cap and trade program that the government plans to end. Tesla is excluded from the phase-out period, which gives consumers until September 10th to get their vehicle plated and qualify for the rebate. Tesla alleges the transportation ministry discriminated against the company by excluding it. For more on this, I'm joined by Lisa DeMarco. She is a senior partner at DeMarco Allen LLP, a boutique law firm specializing in climate and energy law. She joins me today from Toronto. Lisa, your reaction when you heard Tesla is suing?
It was an interesting development in the cap and trade cancellation file. It's clear that Tesla appears to feel that it has been discriminated against in the announcements and the orderly transition of the cap and trade program and its wind down, particularly as it relates to the vehicle incentives, electric vehicle incentives.
And so why is Tesla itself excluded, though?
So it's interesting. The way that the announcement took place is that vehicles had to be either delivered, registered, and plated by July 11th and or on lot an order made by July 10th and delivered, registered, and plated by September 11th. And as I understand it, that disproportionately affects Tesla because of its delivery model. It does not have lots. It does not deal with the traditional dealership model. And in that regard, it appears to have been, or it's alleging that it has been disproportionately impacted.
Does the lawsuit then have to prove intent, or was just the Ontario government possibly unaware or perhaps negligent? I'm careful using that word, but this does seem to unfairly affect Tesla and Tesla potential consumers and buyers more than any other electric car company.
Yeah, let me make it clear, Jennifer, that we haven't seen the statement of claim or the application, and it really depends on what grounds they're filing under. We understand it's a judicial review of the decision, and so whether it is based on some sort of targeted, unintended impact on Tesla or intended disproportionate impact remains to be seen once we all have a good review of what that lawsuit says.
Yeah, so I guess intention will be sort of the key, but if I'm a customer and I was thinking about buying a Tesla and I live in Ontario, now I'm not going to get the rebate. I'm not going to save $10,000 to $14,000 or whatever the rebate is. I may not buy a Tesla.
That's right, and certainly the impact will be an important part of the evidence, as will the facts. And you're right, looking at intent and other elements of the facts is certainly what, no doubt, the Attorney General and the fine team of lawyers there are doing. They're probably going through all the facts surrounding this announcement in quite a bit of detail and looking at what is claimed and what factually supports or doesn't support that.
All right. Do you see any other fallout from this situation?
Well, I think certainly it's a test case in terms of that creating winners and losers dynamic of the cap and trade cancellation program. So I think a lot of folks, both north and south of the border, will be looking to it to see how it plays out and what sort of impact and factual circumstances led up to the cancellation and how that played out.
And what this might cost Ontario taxpayers when it comes to paying those legal fees to fight back against Tesla.
Certainly it hasn't made life any less busy for lawyers.
There you go. Lisa DeMarco, good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer. Have a great day.
You too. Lisa DeMarco is a senior partner at DeMarco Allen LLP.
So you heard a little example of how the government and, red tape manipulation and all that kind of stuff is basically, as far as I'm concerned, hypocrisy, because while on one hand they're telling people they want to, reduce carbon footprint and all that kind of stuff, and on the other hand, they're cutting programs that could, benefit companies like Tesla to help, subsidize their research and their sales so that they can get them off the ground. But the thing about it is there are lobbyists out there for the oil industry. There's lobbyists out there for the auto industry and the power industry that are constantly throwing roadblocks in the way. And there are senators and congressmen and people out there, parliament members or whatever, that are basically actively supporting those industries that are giving them kickbacks or, donating to their re-election campaign. And so it's the average Joe that keeps getting shafted in the whole process. It's the average Joe that's been out there building these prototypes of repurposing old vehicles and taking the gasoline engines out to do that. But I'm saying, sooner or later, they're going to mess up. And they're going to give to the world, on the market, the capability of running your own house with a self-sustained generator. It's already there. We already have that technology. You already have free energy. It's just not in your grasp if you can't afford to buy that powertrain or build a similar device like it. But regardless of that, the good news is that on the opposite side is that even if you can't afford that, you will be able to afford to understand how energy works differently and utilize it differently so that you save, even if you are on the power grid, you save a massive amount of money because you're not using near the amount of power that you did before. And when I'm done showing everybody that, that will open the floodgates for ingenuity if people take these two pieces of the puzzle and put them together. The electric vehicles, plus what I'm going to show people about how to use electricity in a completely different manner than the standard model, so that you're not destroying your appliances and so that you're not using near the amount of power. Combine these two together and now you got an incredibly efficient electric car that you could drive from one side of the continent to the next and still not have to stop and charge a doggone thing up. That's not fiction. That's not science fiction. That's fact. That's science fact. That's taking all the best of the laws of physics and using them to your advantage. Once you understand what the laws of physics are all about, you don't have to, if you know this is going to be a certain result because you do a certain thing, then if you need to get around that, there are other physics that will work to your advantage to overcome or compensate for any of the supposed losses. Inside the internal combustion engine is a prime example of the most inefficient, wasteful use of energy in the history of time. If there was ever a case for over-unity, the internal combustion engine would be that. Because that internal combustion engine generates so much heat that if it isn't compensated by a cooling system and electrical system to run fans and so on down the line, plus airflow across that, that engine will generate so much heat that it will literally destroy itself. Once you understand about the thermal breakdown of any given point, if you get that this particular material will fail at this temperature right here, where the next one in line will fail at a higher temperature. Once you get that, then you know where the weak point is in that, and you should be able to, at the very least, change that material to something that has a higher thermal breakdown point. So now the next weakest spot in the deal would be obviously the lowest thermal breakdown point. And you can step that up and stage it until eventually you get to the point where you've got an engine that will run at extreme temperatures. But the only place that you need the heat is inside the piston. That's it. Inside the cylinder. That's it. You don't need it on the rest of the engine. So why are we running these engines like that? Why are we allowing the temperature, the heat to transfer through that engine block? So they're not engineered to their maximum efficiency. Therefore, they're going to reach their thermal breakdown. You're going to blow a head gasket or a seal, and it's going to start leaking. It's going to leak oil, or it's going to leak antifreeze. They got to break down, otherwise somebody ain't going to have a job fixing them, right? Well, you know, what about a car that would never break down? And it is fully possible to do. Once you understand the laws of physics, what is actually occurring, why these materials finally break down. You got grease in the bearings of your wheels in your car. If you can keep that grease down to a reasonable temperature where it's not going to start losing its viscosity, then that means that grease will never fail. That means that those bearings will be constantly lubricated, and as long as they're constantly lubricated, they won't be grinding on the seat that the bearings actually are rolling across. it's always the weaker or the softer metal that is going to be the sacrificial point that's going to fail before the actual part, and they do that so that you can try to salvage the most expensive parts on there. But even in that modern day, the way that they do things is they make them cheaper, they make them junk, so that they will fail. They have a lifespan, they have a time limit. That's why everybody out there is all worried about the mileage on a car. I'm not worried about the mileage. I could care less. If a car had 300,000 miles and it still ran good and it wasn't leaking fluid, then that car's more than proven itself. That's why I say the Japanese auto industry have done some incredible work, and they built some really good cars. You'll hear a lot of talk about those Japanese cars. But in reality, those Japanese cars are faster, they are more reliant, they're just gear to weight ratio is near perfection. And so with that said, they're cheaper cars, but they're made better. And here in the United States, we got a lot of different cars that are cool, some hot rods, but even these, they're set up to fail. And they may be really nice, but they're really expensive to work on as well. Not so much with the Japanese cars. They got that down pretty good. So in the auto industry, I'd say the Japanese are leading the pack in that kind of deal. But hey, that's just my opinion. You take it however you want. But when it comes down to electricity, when it comes down to electric cars, these electric cars are too good, and they know it, and that's why they're trying to backpedal on them to get them out of your way. But the good thing is that there are average Joes and Janes out there building their own versions, and they're learning a lot about it, and they're sharing all their tricks with everybody. If you've been paying attention to what I've been trying to share with you today, then you already know you have free electricity. You already know it. Now, you're going to have that poo-pooer out there that's going to say, "Oh, well, electricity ain't free because you got to buy the machinery." Stop being an apologist for the system. Stop being a naysayer. It's not becoming of you. It's ridiculous. It doesn't make you look intelligent when you say things like that, because energy is free. The equipment, of course you're going to buy the equipment, but once you've got that equipment and you know how to maintain that equipment, you make sure that it's not reaching its thermal breakdown points or the weakest point of that thing, and it'll last indefinitely. If anything ever does fail, it's because of a design flaw. But if you get that and you know what that design flaw is, you can build things to compensate for it. You can build cooling systems. Even the internal combustion engine. If you had a diesel engine that basically, because it has oil in the fuel, you could use the wasted heat energy to heat your house. You could have that thing heating your house with the wasted heat energy while using the diesel engine to have the torque and the power to turn a generator head and basically run your electricity. And if you use that electricity in a different manner than you're doing now, then you'll get more efficiency out of it. You'll get more use out of it. You could run your whole entire house off of a small diesel engine. If you understand how electricity companies doing it, and you take that information and you run with it, you don't need near the amount of power to run your house. And even if you do have a generator capable of producing that much power, you're not going to ever use that much power. So you move that power on down the line. It's so ridiculously simple, it just boggles my mind why people don't get it. But I'm going to keep on doing what it is I'm doing. I'm going to keep on trying to share this information with people. I would have thought by now that these chat rooms over here at Mad Science would be just cram-packed full of people. But I also realize that because I need to use certain different softwares like Chatango, that those particular softwares and even Google AdSense causes a warning on my site that says it's not all secure. even though I pay for a secure certificate, even though these other are legitimate websites, even though Google themselves is supposedly secure. But merely by putting a Google ad on there is enough for it to say it's not secure. Now, I want to broadcast this message out, and so I get the same exact result, not secure, because of the software that I have to use and the coding that I have to use in order to be able to do that. But nobody's here trying to steal anybody's information. There's no malware, there's no viruses and all that kind of stuff, but they know this. It's the way that they ensure that people out there, that websites that are approved by the system actually get the traffic. And so unless people actually know the truth, that this is a safe place to be, they're not going to come here. They're not going to show up. And so it shows right now in the Super Chat room, I got five people in there. Three of them's me. So what gives here? You know, when it comes to the broadcasting, how many numbers I'm getting broadcasting out, it's a different story because I go about it a different way. But then nonetheless, the way that it's set up is to convince me that it's not working and to convince you that it's not safe to come here to listen. And the only way that I can get people here is if you go out and tell somebody else, hey, it is safe to go there. I've been there for years. And I never had any problems. See, we're going to have to watch each other's back. We're going to have to support one another. If we ever want to get this information, this truth out there, then we're going to have to understand we're up against a Goliath. We're up against a giant. And this giant doesn't want us saying what we're saying. There are people out there who are prime example, like Tesla, who's basically been trying to get this out there in the open market. And I'm telling you, electricity is free. If you don't believe that, that's your opinion, that's your choice. But there's going to come a day when you're going to find out that it could have been, but you waited too long and you allowed those who are already in charge to keep control just by manipulating the law and the regulations to ensure that no matter what happens, you will still pay. Folks, go take a look at your electric bill. You look about that and calculate up how much money throughout the lifetime of you being wherever you're at and paying that electric bill. How much money you could have saved, how much money, what you could have done with that money. Whether it be supporting each other's research, building prototypes to prove everything that we've been talking about, or whether it be just simply enough to get you so energy efficient that you save money. And you could take that money and invest it in other ideas that you got to better your community and humanity. That's what Mad Scientist stands for. And that's why I do what it is that I do. If you've been enjoyed anything about this show today, please share the podcast. The podcast is my last hope to get this information out to other people. To get it past this wall that's been put in front of me. I bear my own financial burden in order to try to bring this information to you for free, and I will give you idea after idea after idea for free. I'm not in this to get rich. Take this information, I've been putting it out for years, get it past the brick wall. Lob it over there to somebody else, have them rebroadcast it or whatever. Cut it, chop up the best parts and leave whatever you don't. It don't matter. I'm just trying to get the information out there because I understand that the mainstream science and the mainstream media and the governmental systems and the companies, corporations, the energy industries, the auto industries, military industrial complex want to keep you under control. As long as you're under control, you're going to keep on giving them money. Send this information out to somebody. Everybody needs to build their own dream team, their own research team in their neighborhood. And we can reach across these with these tools like Skype and everything. We can share information and we can help troubleshoot things real time. We can get answers and we can get results. That's what people do. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to the Mad Science Show. Take care.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh, one ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Hmm, puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.